Good morning and welcome to the Town of Discover Bay Board of Directors annual workshop meeting. I'd like to, we got all open with the Pledge of Allegiance. Rick Harvey, will you lead?
Ready?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
President Steele?
Here.
Vice President Pease?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Lee?
Here.
Director Simon?
Here.
Thank you very much. We're all here. Any public comment? Any public wishing to speak would come up to the podium. There's a 3-minute time limit from the public for our comments. Everything should go through the chair. At this time, I'd like to pull item 9 from this agenda today and for further discussion at a later date.
Good job.
And then I'll turn it over to staff. I appreciate everybody being here today. And just a note that this will be our last workshop in this building, and that we're going to be moving to our new community center set up here this year. So looking forward to that.
No pressure. Thank you, President Steele.
Ready?
Thank you, board, for giving it to Saturday morning. Dina, Farron, Greg. I'm sorry, not Farron. Farron was it, but we had the workshop. Virgil, appreciate you guys being here. Carol, and thank you for getting the pastries and donuts this morning. And juices.
Thank you.
This is our opportunity to begin our annual budget season. We kind of kick it off with this workshop. We also want to bring items to the board that are that are on staff's radar screens that I think are on yours as well, and discuss some items that there's two relatively critical items that are on here that we're going to discuss this morning. So with that, I'm just going to get into it, and I want to talk about the items on today's agenda, which are, if I can read that far, change glasses. Our 2014 year in review, we're going to talk about last year the board spent quite a bit of time reviewing the mission, vision, values, and goals statements and made a number of modifications and recommended that each annual workshop we bring that back, so we're bringing that back for your review this morning. Discussing the ongoing drought and where our forecast is into 2015, existing water meter program and system-wide implementation, rollout of that, the tertiary treatment process, the filter project, and the denitrification project funding considerations. We've been, Gregory, the state board, staff, and I have been trying to work on a couple of items we want to present to the board, and we presented them briefly to the Water Wastewater Committee on Wednesday afternoon. The board has asked at the last meeting, or I guess it was the meeting in January, the first meeting in January, to discuss the board officer rotation schedule proposal, and there's, I believe there's a proposal that was emailed out to you yesterday from Director Lee. There were two proposals emailed out to you yesterday regarding committee assignment considerations, review of the bylaws and Town of Discovery Bay board policies as it relates to the board, and the bylaws of the town, which relate again back to the board. The community center the DB Community Foundation partnership, which the board has just determined to pull that item. The 2015-16 budget calendar. And anything else that we didn't hit that the board would like us to focus in on the coming fiscal year. So just moving forward real quickly, in 2014, we opened the community center on January 2nd to continue to offer services. Boy, that's so small for me up here. I'm sorry, I have to pull my copy that I gave to Greg Harris. Thank you. The bond-funded segment of the CIP program is winding down, and we anticipate all funds to be spent and the projects to be complete by the end of this summer. We've hosted a number of successful events over the community center, including the Earth Day event, Oktoberfest, River Otter Swim Team inaugural year took off, Friday night movies in the park, the Festival of the Trees, and a number of other rentals and different types of events over there. We've completely renovated 6 tennis courts over the course of the past year. The swimming pool is currently under construction for its resurfacing, and if you happen to see my Friday letter yesterday, there's some photos of it in there. We adopted ordinance number 25, emergency drought restrictions. We'll be talking a little bit about that as it relates to the drought and water meters in a little bit. Well 7 is under construction after some permitting delays at the county. We are transitioning on Monday from contractual landscape services on the west side of town to in-house. And again, I provided some information on the new employees yesterday to you in the Friday letter. We updated our water and wastewater capacity fee structure. We achieved the CSA's District of Distinction, one of currently 22 in the state that hold that designation or that distinction, as well as a number of other awards and milestone achievements. The park transfer agreement is still mired in the county council's office. Supervisor Pipo at the state of the town made a note of it publicly last Saturday night, or 2 weeks ago on Saturday night, indicating that she still is supporting and would like to get that resolved, as we would as well. Over on the finance side, we implemented the Express Bill Pay online bill pay system, which makes it a lot easier for customers to be able to come in and go online and set up online bill pay. And if they don't have it set up, they come in and pay their bill. We actually have a computer in the back of the room. We bring them to them and let them set their accounts up while they're here and kind of walk them through that. The fiscal 13-14 audit was completed. The field work was completed. They anticipate having a draft of the document to the board with the final one 2 weeks later, sometime in the late February to March timeframe. They were also very happy because this is the first year that we were able to, the first fiscal year that we were able to have a complete transition from what was originally QuickBooks, and then we did a double system for a year, QuickBooks and Cassell, thank you. And this is the first year we were completely on the Cassell financial system. So it was a 3-year process in order to make that take place. Most importantly, I think for the board, 2014 was a relatively trouble-free year. There were no real major issues that sprang up during the course of the year that negatively cast a shadow on the town, its board of directors, or its staff, or its operations. And I think that that's something that we should all be proud of regarding that. Do you have any questions about any of these? The next item is really for you. It's the mission, vision, values, and goals, broken up into the mission and vision, and it was adopted by the board on February the 19th of last year, after the board workshop. And so if the board has any plans on changing it or any wants to modify it in any way, now would be the time to discuss that, and we can schedule any changes that the board may have at the next board meeting or at a subsequent board meeting. It's not uncommon for a board to, or an elected body, to change those as time changes, although we'd had them in place for a number of years. And the board did make some substantial changes to that last year.
Where do we also put this mission on any of our letterhead, or do we use this with our... internally at all?
We use it internally.
Business cards or anything?
No, we don't use it. It's a lot of information to put on a, you know, on a letterhead or on a business card. It is on our website. And
is that prominent? You like it?
Well, you know, as you know, we're rebuilding the website, right. And I think that it would probably valid point that when we build a new website, we will make that a more prominent situation. One thing I do want you to know, though, is that when I do performance reviews or staff does performance reviews on their staff, that they are graded on these 4, the mission, vision, values, and goals. There's a section on there that applies to how they comply, how they do their jobs as it relates to these 4 sections. So if there's any questions about that, any modifications, any comments?
Well, the only comment I have is under vision. I'm not sure the first 2 sentences make sense to me. Full service and sustainable community, growing in harmony with the environment in the Delta. rest of it is fine, but I don't see how that makes much sense. Just the wording. Hello.
It's good. I'm okay with it, but yeah, there's a lot of extra there. It's a little fluffy.
I remember last year, we modified this section last year, and the board, if I recall, spent more time on this sentence
it was worded worse than
it they now. Did on any other part of it. And
I don't disagree. Maybe
the only problem I have with this is the first one is so incomplete as a sentence that it almost doesn't make sense. It's totally. Like we should be a full service and sustainable community, or maintain a full service and sustainable community, but just to say full service and sustainable community
doesn't
say what is that full service. So that the rest of them, I get that they're semicolon statements that are meant to be.
Correct.
Standalone statements, but that first one, just especially since it's the first one, it just kind of throws the whole thing into.
There's a verb missing.
Thank you.
No action.
It's like there's something missing.
It's a full service.
Or we are a sustainable full service.
Maintain a full service.
Exactly.
Whatever. Something along those lines.
Come on,
is there something we can put in there to make that make more sense?
Maintain is actually.
I can. You know what I can do is I can.
Maintain what?
We can bring it back at the meeting on the 4th, 11th, 19th. This one section
now.
And just do a real quick hammer it out, and I can give some options and some considerations just to
do
it
real quick
and
right
take
now.
A well, try the and
only
work
one
I'm better.
The only one that I have any issue with personally is the first one.
Let's take it.
And I really don't want to rehash the rest of it, to be honest with you. Because we did that last year. The only person that wasn't part of that conversation at this point was Director Lee. So unless he has something that he really doesn't like, I would say let's not waste our time doing it again, except just let's add something to that first sentence. And I would suggest we put maintain a full service and sustainable community.
Yeah, I like that.
Works for me.
Okay.
Fine.
Okay. Got that, Carol?
Yeah.
For the 19th?
All right,
unless somebody has a better one.
Is that clear?
Be a,
that's fine.
I think we're all aligned to this stuff, though. I just see everything that we do is perfectly aligned to this, so I like it.
Okay, then the goals and values.
Yeah, those goals are good. I just ask that you guys have some more specific goals. You know, I know we do, but
you drill those goals down.
Yeah,
through the organization.
Yes, we do, we do them. Last year we had a discussion on a strategic plan, whether or not the board wanted to pursue we completed the master plans and we had some conversation, some discussion on a long-term 10 to 30 year strategic plan on where the board wants to, where we want to go in the long run and what direction we're going to take. And so we'd actually modified the agenda report format form to prior to that meeting, we're going to roll it out if the board was going to do that. That would identify each and every agenda report that came to the board, and it would, so each item would comply with, you could look down at the bottom right hand corner and it says complies with, it would be a CIP project, it would be an item in the budget, it would be a goal of ours, it would be a, you know, vision of ours, something along those lines. You could actually see what it related back to. And we've got that, and I can show it to the board if you'd like to see that and see how that might work out. And that way, you know, as a board, when items come before you, just a real quick look at it says, okay, this is something. If there's nothing there, you might want to say, well, why are we doing this if there's no, it's not part of any of our plans, or it's not part of what we're trying to do. And that may happen on occasion. But for the most part, it would relate back to an item that's in the budget, whether it's a capital item, an operating item, whether it's a goal of the board, one of our policies, something along those lines. Do you have any comment on that?
Information? No, I'm fine.
No.
Yeah. I'm good.
I'll bring that up I'll bring that out at one of the next meetings and just kind of show you how that might work. It's just as a sample and see if you like it. I'm only showing you this as from if you look at 2014, January 28th and January 28th of 2015, January 13th of 2015, you can see where we are. NOAA has indicated that if there's any relief in the drought this year, it will be marginal at best. They were hoping, obviously, for a stronger El Nino that did not develop. And so it looks like we'll be heading into a fourth year of drought conditions. And the next slide, you can see it looks better in color than it does in the grayscale in the handout. But it shows a 14-day rain outlook from January 20th to February 3rd. And as you can see, it doesn't look, we're in the brown stage, and doesn't look like we're going to be getting too much. Although the East Coast is getting hammered, and it's in brown too right now, so I'm not sure how much you can
tell that to the guys playing golf down in Arizona right now.
Yeah, it's raining.
Yeah.
Hard to believe it.
Yeah. You've already seen this. This is the water consumption from 2009 through 2014, or 2009 through 2014. 2014 was the lowest we've seen in that time frame, in that six-year window, which is 2009 was right smack at the height of the economic downfall. And we've had new growth. People are moving back into empty homes, and the economy's turning around, and homes out in Discovery Bay West are selling, as I understand it, pretty much like hotcakes. But about right, Virgil, once they're done, people are moving into them. So with new people moving in, our numbers are going down. There was a nice article in yesterday's Discovery Bay Press. I'm not sure if any of you had a chance to see that.
When do we implement the policy?
The board passed it on September the 3rd, and it took 30 days to go into effect. So it was October 3rd. So the final 3 months of the year was a 24% reduction.
But it's interesting that the reduction kind of started in May.
Yeah, but it was, if you remember, the state had started earlier.
Okay,
there was
a lot of media attention.
Yeah, we started doing some promotional materials ahead of time, but when we passed the ordinance and really started getting the information out, a lot of local newspaper articles, there were a lot of PSAs. It wasn't just us passing the information along. I just think it was the overall acknowledgement of the community that, hey, we're in a drought situation, we need to preserve and reserve our water resources.
How much did that impact our revenue?
Well, it didn't impact our revenue on the side of town that doesn't have meters, because that's all through the property tax side. Water meters on those portion of town, the 1900 or 2100 or so water meters that are in place, we're usually shut down. You know, most of them are pretty quiet this time of year anyway. They generally, most people shut their landscape irrigation meters off, and I would suspect that it will be minimal right now. If it continues on into the summer, it may be a little bit more noticeable.
Nice. Okay. Thanks. So if those houses coming online, we should see more consumption.
But we're not.
Well, no, we will. This summer, right?
Summer.
Which brings me to item number one of the big hit items for the board to consider today. There's a lot of moving parts to this conversation. We rolled out, I believe, Virgil, in about 2000, the water meters on the west side of town.
Meters were in place around 2000.
The reading?
They weren't read.
They started reading them
probably 2005, 2006.
Yeah, 2006.
And we use what's known as an automatic meter reader system. And that's what takes place out there in today's world. Most meters are not read by a guy who walks around and reads meters anymore. They're smart meters, theoretically supposed to be smart meters.
Is someplace else when we talk about water meters, so nice to him.
I know.
Why don't you guys trade chairs?
I don't want to sit next to him.
I'm going to sit right next to
him. I heard a clear throat. I'm going, oh, God.
I'm moving right over now.
Datamatic, who's been providing what's called the Fireflies, and the Fireflies are the electronic piece of equipment that sends the signals to a mesh system, which then sends it to Texas, which then relays it overnight back to us. They filed bankruptcy last year, and they're in fact, I think they are now completely out of business, if I'm not mistaken, or at least that portion of their business is.
And they got bought out by
Bought out by a company named Zenner, which is a European company. Knowing that they were in BK and that we were having some issues with the system, themselves. Dina, Virgil, Aaron, myself started looking at different options and different considerations as a replacement program for that side of town as it relates to the equipment. Right now, we have about 1,900, more than that now, about 2,300 homes, 2,400 that are on meters. And we have about a 15% failure rate on the batteries are dying. And they're expensive to replace. And when we replace them, more and more of the batteries are dying. And so what we're going to be recommending to the board here in the coming months is to transition, and we'll run a double system for a while until we transition out of the current existing datamatic system. Staff has identified a system by the name of Badger. It's a product. It's a national line of products that they make them. They're just a picture of one of their readers right there. The readers relatively seamlessly attach the readers attached to our meters with relative ease. There's a little bit modification that's going to need to take place. And we have this in our sights as we go to transition and to bring the rest of the system-wide program in place, which would be those residential neighborhoods that are not metered, that we would start metering them at some point in the future. The state has a 20% reduction by 2020. Now, we've met that for the last 3 months. We didn't meet it for the last year. But nonetheless, it's shown that water meters help save money. Water meters conserve, help save water. There's the corresponding impact of a reduction in revenues as a result of that. But there's ways around that as well. And I know that Director Graves is not a fan of this, but there is, and it is being, it's not required yet at the state level, but I think it may be coming here soon, that there is some form of unit volume pricing, just like with your PG&E bill. If you use more electricity, you're gonna pay more for your water. A tiered pricing structure of some sort. And that is a way to encourage conservation, but also for those people to continue to use more than maybe they need. For whatever purposes that you are able to, it's a penalty, more or less. So,
but it's a penalty for having, for being successful in life and prospering, and therefore having a nice big home with a nice big yard, or is it a penalty for using too much water? That's the question. Yeah.
It's not uncommon to have them, and I your point is well taken.
What's the?
Not that I am.
But I understand.
the state. Has mandated that meters be put into all residential homes by a certain date. Is that
2025?
By 2024.
And if a district doesn't reach that goal, what happens?
Well, one of the things we're working on, and I should have a draft of either this week or next week, and I'll be bringing it to the board once I get a chance to work with the consultants on it, Ludo from Scalmanini, is the Urban Water Management Plan. And that Urban Water Management Plan will identify items that we will implement in terms of water conservation, how we're going to manage our water. It's a long-term process. And one of those items includes the discussion of when are we going to be starting the process and completing the process of system-wide meter reading throughout the entire community. So.
Right, but my question was, what happens if a district doesn't meet the 2024 date?
It's part of the state regional water quality control board, and you get a notice of violation, and you'll be fined until you come into compliance.
Right. Well, the reason I'm asking that in the dollar amount specific is because that information needs to be distributed to the community, so they understand that we have to comply, or we've got to pay a fine. I don't know if a lot of people know that. Whenever we get to that point.
You know, now that DPH, that role has transitioned from Department of Public Health to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, which also oversees the sanitation, the sanitation side of the house. That just took place this fiscal year, and so, Greg, do you know anything about that as it relates to the water and the water,
well,
how they're managing
the
that yet?
The real thing is the regional board, Regional Quality Control Board, is used to generating revenues to fund. You know, Department of Health, not so much. You know, Department of Health was kind of like your local neighbor. Okay, you guys got to do this, you got to do that. If you didn't turn something in, it was no big deal. Regional Water Quality Control Board, you know, they have annual inspections. They're on it all the time. And, you know, they're basically looking for ways to generate revenue off of compliance.
Well, there's no reason not to have them by 2024, and it would come out in the newspaper. It would come out on our website, and when people know it's mandated by 2024. I know this is your pet project that you've been trying to get in since you've been here, but I'm going to tell you, you can't pick a worse time than you're picking right now to put meters in. We asked the residents to reduce 20%. They answered us by reducing 30%, according to Veolia's last report.
24, but anyway.
So now you're going to take, we're being paid at full rate, even though they've reduced by 30% for the majority of the town. Now you're going to take people who've volunteered to reduce 30%, you're going to put their meters in, hopefully they reduce another 8 to 10%, our income drops 40%, guess what we're going to do? We're going to raise our rates 40% for conserving, and you're going to have an uproar in this town. The other thing we're not looking at is, you have a lot of homes here where people are weekenders, and they don't use any water. You're getting billed at full rate right now for those people. Yeah. When you put their meters in, you get nothing. You get a base rate, that's all you're going
to
get.
Yeah, there's an equity, you know, I talked to a lot of people that are weekenders, and they have the argument that that's really not a fair, it's not an equitable situation. You know, somebody lives here
full time. We're not in disagreement. What I'm telling you is our income is derived from property tax and from water.
Right.
When you take 40% of our income away, and our bills are going up, we have infrastructure issues that are huge, we have multiple issues that are huge, and all of a sudden our income drops 40%. You gonna go back to these people and raise their rates 40%?
Well, okay. Why not? There's different ways to do that.
Yes. So, what you're saying, Mark, is has truth to it in a general state, but it's not accurately describing the situation. The situation is that we consume a bottle of water in the town. This is full. The whole town consumes this bottle of water. We're not gonna charge you for consuming any more than that bottle of water because that's all you're consuming.
I understand that.
It's just how is that fairly being distributed by those that use it, and the fair and where the other side of that coin from yours is that it's fair for those that are using more water to pay more money and those that are using less water to pay less money.
I don't disagree with that either.
Well, that's all the metering does.
But what I'm telling you, I understand that part of it. From my point of view, I'm single and I live in a 3,200 square foot house. I use no water. I mean, I'm never there, and I pay what my neighbor who has three kids across the street. And I understand it. And a lot of people are going to go, hey, it's not fair. Why am I paying $800 a year for my water and sewer?
Yeah, your bill would go down.
Of course it would. But in exchange for my bill going down, you're going to raise my rate because we need the income in this town.
But the rate's irrelevant. It's the dollar amount that's relevant, not the rate. The rate makes no difference whatsoever. That's what I'm saying. It's the dollar amount that's relevant, not the rate. No.
I call it the rate, you call it dollars. You call it.
No. What your bill, the dollar amount on your bill every month is what's relevant, not how much we're charging you per gallon of water you use. That's the rate. The rate is how much we're charging you per gallon.
But you're going to have to start charging me more for that rate because we can't make up the income in this town.
Absolutely, but all that's going to do is still ensure that you pay your fair share. It's not going to make you pay any more than you should.
So you're going to take a guy who conserved, a guy who was using a ton of water and conserved by 38%, and tell him we're going to raise your bill 38% because we can't.
No, we're not. It's not. That won't happen.
Yes, it is. How is it not? How are you going to pay your bills in town? We have no income. That's our income.
I understand that, Mark. The point is,
we've had this.
See, we're talking apples and oranges here. I know, but we're talking. It's because I can't seem to say it in a way that I can get you to see what I mean.
I understand you're paying your fair share.
No, what I'm saying is, it's a zero-sum game we're playing. We're only going to charge for the water that's used.
Correct, Chris.
We're not asking for anybody to pay any more than what they use.
I understand that.
Okay,
that's
so then how is it? Then how is that unfair to anybody?
All right. Okay, maybe we got a different view of it.
Yeah,
one second. Yeah. You send me my bill. Last month it was $86 on water, and I conserve next month, and it's now $40. I pay my $40 bill. 4 or 5 months down the road, and the town's going, we need more income.
Absolutely. You get punished for conserving.
We're going to get punished.
That's just the way it works in every community.
I understand.
We can't be different.
So to put them in now and then come back and be forced to raise people's rates by a ton to cover the money.
That argument's going to go on until year 2023, though.
Exactly.
That argument's going to go on until year 2023. And we can keep kicking the can down the road. But anyway, I'd like to hear a fresh point of view.
I just have a different one. Ludolf and Scalmanini is going to do the water management plan, correct? Will part of their discussion work on the economics and the rate impact of water meters?
No.
Okay. Would Bartle Wells be able to do that?
Yes.
Thank you.
But the last time they were here, he stood up, and I think Greg has said it, has stood up and said, if you conserve,
your unit cost goes up high. Everybody knows that.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is the point. If the meters are not due till 2024 and people are voluntarily conserving water and we're collecting the same rate, why would we cut our own throat?
Well, that's why I think we have to have a discussion, as you're not going to switch one day and put 4,000 meters online.
You'll do it a period of a year.
Over the next nine years we're going to do it.
I know.
So you might do 1/9 per year. I don't know.
Well, I think we would try and do a little bit more aggressive than that. We would try and do it over a 3-year period.
Well, I think that's a discussion for the Water and Wastewater Committee.
Yeah, because I think it would be good to have in place by 2020.
Exactly.
So that we meet the requirements of SBX, whatever.
What are the new homes installing right now?
All new meters.
I know what system.
They're installing our system that's in bankruptcy right now.
Wow.
Why are they still installing that?
Because we haven't changed it out yet.
You full of them and you can't throw them away, and you haven't. Nobody's been given the go ahead to buy these.
I thought nobody could read them. Didn't you see these ones are
No. The new ones are going in are reading fine. It's the older ones that have been
when the battery
for a long time. So we're going to.
They sold us the old system. Bulletproof, never going to have a problem with it. You'll be having for 25 years, you'll never have a problem. I was here when we put those in.
It's a good salesman.
And now here we are.
Well, they went bankrupt. They went bankrupt.
Yeah.
You know, that's really the biggest problem, is that they went bankrupt, and their successor company, the company that bought their assets, Zenner, they actually came to the game late. We met with them. They flew up from Southern California. They gave us a real good song and dance, made a lot of promises, and have absolutely not lived up to any of them. I've sent them a number of emails. That, we'll get to you. We're on it. A month later, no response, nothing. So we are going to be transitioning to the new system, and we'll get that to the board here in the near future is how we're going to be doing that. Yeah. That's just going to be transitioning the west side of town that's currently metered. As those AMRs, those mesh readers fail, We're gonna maintain the mesh system in place until we've completely gotten to a point where it makes sense to transition everybody out at a certain point. It's a cellular based system.
Wouldn't we just use our pile?
We're not sure exactly the price yet because it's an individual unit price.
Switch them over.
We'll be paying for it.
We already own all of them.
Yeah, because we collect money every year.
It's simple.
On the property taxes that are for meter maintenance. So part of that, and we've been replacing it anyway, and they continue to fail. And it's just throwing good money after bad.
And there's a number of other agencies, water agencies, that have gone through this exact same thing.
Yeah.
Where they've gone from one type of reader to another. They've gone from the wireless to the wired, from wired to wireless. And we can talk to those folks and see how they work their transition plan.
Yeah, we have.
We're not treading new territory
here, though, in this recommendation here. So is this
bringing the information to you.
He's saying start the system in next year.
I don't know what Mountain House uses.
That's installing the meters. You haven't read them.
They probably have some form of automatic reader system.
Yeah.
They're a little bit newer, so theirs went in later. They might have a Badger system. The companies that use Datamatic, there are a lot of them in the area, a lot of them around the country, and they're doing the exact same, they're struggling with the exact same problems we are.
I'm thinking Mountain House is 10 years old. We should see what they're using. Maybe they're not having a problem with them, unless they're using the same thing we're using.
Sell them to them.
And we spent literally the better part of 2014 interviewing companies. As you recall, we tested their equipment. We deployed their equipment on site. We got different meters or different AMRs from all the different vendors, and we deployed them all in the field. And we keep going back to the Badger unit.
Yeah. So Bring us a plan with the Badgers and 2016.
Well, for the west side of town, it's going to happen a lot quicker than that.
And you can sell the rest of the old equipment out to somebody.
No, what rest of equipment's? It's failed at that point.
Got it.
It gets replaced when it fails.
All right. Make art out of it.
All right,
they will get recycled because they're basically batteries.
All right, so we're good. So water conservation is going really good in the town. So we're going to hold the course this year, basically.
The urban water management plan that's being prepared by Ludorf has to be approved by the Department of Water Resources. It's not something that we have to approve and then it's we just submit it. They have to go through a review process and they have to accept it. So it's got to come back to you before we send it to DWR, because there might be some things in there that you might not like moving forward. The board may decide that let's start rolling out meters on this side of town in 2020. Let's start rolling out meters on this side of town in 2016. So those decisions are going to be coming to you in the next probably 60 days as to how we're going to wrap it up in the urban water management plan. And if we submit it to them and we say we're going to start in 2020, the state may come back because of the drought, even though our aquifers are relatively solid. In fact, they're very solid. There's been no overdrafting whatsoever in our side. The state may come back and say, no, we want them in because of the drought conditions sooner than that. I don't know the answer to that question. We haven't submitted it. We haven't spoken to them yet, and we don't know what they're doing.
There's two phases to this. You've got to put the meters in the homes that don't have them.
Yes.
And then we have to start reading them. We can start reading them whenever.
2024.
By 2024.
Yeah.
But if we have the plan established that we're going to roll them out X amount of month or a year or whatever, that first phase, that mechanical part of it, I think we should be able to make some kind of decision relatively easy on that.
And once we get the urban water management plan, and if the board wants, when we get that, and we get the data that's included in there as it relates to what our long-term consumption will be, if you want to have Bartle Wells do an economic analysis of that and how it would impact us, we can certainly do that as a tandem measure and have it as part of the same package. So you know what the financial impact is going to be.
Yeah. Like,
and
the financial impact.
Different considerations with whether it's one rate or it's a tiered rate or what's going to happen over a five-year period.
And then how you operationally, how you're going to maybe phase it in versus
right.
flip a switch.
Right.
Do you really want to have in the ground 4 or 5 years though before you start reading them?
No.
Because you're not going to be able to install them in 60 days either. So.
No,
but you're doing the
meter. The meter is just strictly a pass through. It's the
meter.
The battery, the reader part. Yeah.
You can install the
AMR
meters today.
Meter.
Install the reader 2 years from now.
You can install the meters today.
Right.
And then read them next week or as Bill.
No, that's not what I'm saying, but do you want to have the batteries in a
meter? No.
No, that's the
reader. We don't buy those yet and deploy those yet.
There's two component parts in there. Yeah, you got the meter itself, water running through it, and then you put
the reader
hubcap on it, and that reads. Well, you don't have to put that hubcap on it until whenever.
So what we're replacing from whatchamacallit to Badger or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Is not the meter, just the sending it.
Yes.
Okay. So
Dina actually knows more about it than I do.
Okay, so what our plan is the Firefly piece, the reader, is what's really kind of dying. So we have meters in the ground, they're going to stay.
Hey, Dina, hold on 1 second. If you turn to, the first page says Zenner. If you turn to further back in the pack, it says Badger meter, making water visible, and it has a picture of a computer on the right-hand side of the page. About two-thirds, maybe.
Got it.
There you go. Okay. The picture below the computer shows the meter, and on top of that, the black item with the red cord shows the reader, and the little gray tower thing is what goes through the meter box, through the lid itself, and is screwed onto the lid and glued onto the lid, and you can drive over it and everything else, and you can run a lawnmower over it, and that's the actual sending device. So, Dina, continue.
Okay, so we have the meters in the ground already. Whatever those meters are, we've actually tested these Orion readers on them, and we can actually do that. So we're just going to replace those as the fireflies die, and that's how we're going to phase out that system. If the meter, something goes bad with the meter, then we'll purchase a Dodger meter and we'll put that in. But right now, whatever meters are in the ground work just fine with this Orion reader piece. And so that's what we're going to be replacing and running the dual system at the time.
How often do the meters themselves fail, Virgil?
Very rare.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Really rare.
Do they recharge themselves or?
The meters?
No, I don't, yeah.
The meters
have. It's a mechanical.
It's a mechanical.
Yeah.
The water makes it.
The computer.
The other unit she's talking about has a battery.
Oh, okay.
And most of them last 10 to 20 years.
Well, we haven't been getting out of the battery.
No generator on.
No,
we get out of data
matters. Out of data matters.
But in the old section, there's nothing in the old section discovery. There's no meters in the ground.
No, in the old section, no. Well, no. There's just curb stops.
So
they're just an angle stop.
We figured a couple years ago the expense is about $500 a home to put them in, to plumb them, and
it's going to be the meter, the reader, right, and the labor is probably going to be, the meter itself is, how much?
They're all about the same price.
Yeah, but how much is the meter and the reader? How much is the package for the meter and the AMR? This setup right there.
About $200, $250, right around there.
The meter's how much?
About 100. It depends on the volume when you buy them.
But what's a 5/8 inch meter? It's going to be on a house.
Did you hear that number?
Yeah, they're anywhere from $200 to $250 for the meter, depending on the meter that you choose.
And meter and reader.
And
that's
the meter on top of that. That's what we would be putting in.
And then labor.
If you had to come to my house tomorrow to put the meter and a reader in, what would it cost?
It probably costs about $300 plus labor.
What would the labor be?
It depends on the situation in your property.
The
so
boxes, the old
hour,
boxes are small.
They're all going to be that way. So let's assume
well,
it's
not
boxes
all, but you're right. Because there are some custom homes that put in the right ones ahead of time. But
yeah,
that's where the inequitable.
It's
going to be inequitable for us at that point, depending on how your home was built, who built it, how bad a job they did with it, if they put a box in or they didn't put a box in.
Right.
If all that's going to affect
if your driveway's over
the individual,
box.
Whether it's in your driveway or not in your driveway, all that is going to be individualized.
So let's take a worst case scenario, just for the heck of it. If you had to come to a house that had the wrong box, you had to dig up the ground, you had to put the box in, what would it cost?
And it's in the driveway.
What would it
cost? It's concrete. They're all going to be different, but. From an average home, where it's the meter is in the grass, the box is in the grass.
No, mine's not in the box; it's in front.
Where the meter box sits, if it's in the landscape versus hardscape area.
Mine's a hardscape.
It's going to be a lot cheaper, obviously, if it's in the grass.
I understand that,
Mark. We have
a rough idea. You got two people sitting here.
Probably $600 for in landscape area to the R&R.
Not in landscape area.
I'm just hang on a minute. $600
is it concrete?
Plus tearing out the concrete, putting the box in, and pouring new concrete.
A couple of grand.
Unlikely.
Here's the story. We don't have a choice.
It's probably
I understand it. But if you're going to come in next year and start putting people's meters in, tell them we're going to be reading them in 2020, but it's going to cost you $1,000 for me to put your meter in today. I'm telling you,
it's going to cost us $1,000.
It's going to be an
uproar. It's not going to cost them $1,000.
Well, no, it is.
It is.
It's
going
to cost
every house.
We're not
going to
give
them $1,000.
You can move it over to the softscape. Might be cheaper.
But you still got to pay it.
And we have a payment plan?
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
We put the payment plan in.
But we put a payment plan in, we did this before, where it's interest-free for 1 year. And they pay it with their bill.
And the other side of that is if you wait till 2020, it's going to cost 30% more, because construction costs will be higher and parts will be
already
higher.
Already in your neighborhood,
everything else
right?
will be higher. So there's that side of the coin also. But that's just construction economics. Yeah. We all know that. This is always going to be...
This is going to be a hot item until we do it.
It's not a good...
There's no good answer.
But it has to happen.
I agree with you. It does have to happen eventually. But I also think that we're elected by residents of this community. You might want to go out to the people that elected you and ask them how they feel about it. Do you want to spend $1,000? Do you want to put your meters in 9 years early? You've been concerned.
Like one of your Democratic polls. Do you want to spend $1,000 now or wait? How are they going to answer? Of course, how are they going to answer
I'm
that?
I'm going to get on a soapbox here for a moment.
Just for
a minute. We're a water district, and it's incumbent upon this district to conserve, to do whatever we can do to encourage people to conserve water. Meter readers, metered water is the number one way to accomplish that. Some of the things we're considering in the urban water management plan are some rebate programs. You know, buying aerators. If you go and replace certain faucets in the house that are over a certain age, you come back to the board or come back to us, obviously approved by the board, and you would get a, you know, you would get a rebate of $25 or something like that to encourage what, you know, low flow consumption. We're one of the few districts that doesn't do that.
You know, our job is to keep the price of the water as low as possible for our neighbors, and that's what our job is. Okay, and good stable water is what we need to be doing. Okay, so let's have a discussion on this at a later date. I think the Badgers is right phase and project.
But we come back, we'll show you the equipment. We'll have a sample of what it looks like and how it works, and we can do some reconnaissance and go look at your property, Mark, and get an idea. Try and give a quick estimate on what that one might look like. Okay. What an average one might look like, and what's kind of somewhere in between.
Even in a driveway, and let's say there's a driveway there, that current meter box, even if it's stamped concrete, doesn't have the stamped concrete on the
meter
box.
But it may not be a big enough box.
That's okay. You take a saw, and you just cut the square bigger, and you insert it down, and you grout it. You don't have to tear out all
the negative to that, Bill, is your saw has to go past.
It's going to leave
marks. Size of your box, so it's going to leave the cut marks in there because it's not like a jigsaw where it can go straight up and down.
Mm-hmm.
It's circular, so you'll have to go into the outer edge of that stamped concrete, and probably your resident who's there is going to really complain about those cuts, those 8 cuts of being in there.
Well, okay, but then
that's why it's more expensive, but you can repair those. I mean, the reality is you're not going to rip your whole driveway up. You're going to do what Bill says. And then you're gonna have to overcut a little bit, and you're gonna grout it back, and you're gonna repair it.
And the other side of that coin is if the resident doesn't like the process that we're using, they're more than welcome to put it in the box that meets our specs on their own in their own driveway and pay their own cost for it if they think they can do it better. We don't have to do it. Yeah. They just have to provide a meter for us to be able to put the right meter in.
Just the box.
The meter box in to put the right meter in.
And so they have to hire an accredited licensed contractor approved by the town, by us, and why?
Because of the water.
Because we want to make sure that it's installed properly, then we would have to inspect.
We're talking two different things. Kevin's talking about just having a homeowner install the box. Install the meter.
Yeah, I'm not talking. Yeah, I'm just saying if the homeowners like the way we're cutting their driveway, leave it. I agree. We probably won't do it the way you would like it. So you provide us, here's the specs, this is what you need to provide us with, and all they do is put a box over that line that's already there.
Because the specs exist.
And then we'll come in and put the meter in.
We have customers out there today, especially older ones, where they have trees over their meter box today, especially palms. And so that palm tree will have to come down in order to expand that meter box. That would be another issue with that.
There's going to be a bunch of issues.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be unique. There's going to be probably 70% will be exactly the same, very relatively straightforward, and your 30% are probably going to be, every single one of them is going to be different.
And so the issue is education. We have to have good, clear communication with the community. We have to start an education process at some point where we're advertising what's going to happen, have open forums where questions can be asked and answered, and just let them know it's coming. And it starts with an education process. We need to start educating the public as to what the mandate is and that it's coming.
Right. I don't disagree with that. But when are we going to have a study session work session just specifically on this particular, we can't do it today.
On water meters?
Just on water meters and all process and all that.
You know,
how far out?
A good time, Bill, for that would be when you get the draft of the urban water management plan. It's going to be a relatively robust document.
Okay, so when is that going to be back?
I should have a draft. I was told this week, you were at the meeting, John Fawcett and Chris was there. I think they said in the next couple of weeks we should have a draft.
So in the next
by the time we internally get it.
So the next 30 to 45 days, we can schedule a meeting just strictly on water meters and the plan and the education and all that. And then we'll have time to sit down and we've got some meat and potatoes.
And in the meantime, we'll go out and look at some of those more difficult ones and some of the more straightforward ones, and we'll get all the costs for you by then. And I won't be able to have, until the document is complete, I won't be able to do the Bartle Wells analysis. But that is something that I think would be the next logical step in place, and I'd already been thinking about that.
I think that meeting is where we just initiate the plan. We sit down and we make the plan. Hey, we're going to start with this. We're going to go to this. We're going to, this is how it's going to, here's the process.
Whatever.
And then we can start going to step one and seeing how we're going to handle step one or step two. We don't necessarily need to have every cost of every resident in Discovery Bay to start the plan. But we need to start looking at how we're going to address this issue and how we're going to address the community with this issue
over the next 10 years.
Well, we'll have that discussion in 45, 60 days, something like that.
Whenever
staff is ready.
I just think you need to keep in mind, I know you guys, I'm against this, but it's not the point. The thing you need to keep in mind is we've asked the people to conserve, and they've done it. They've done more than we've asked them to do.
We hear you, Mark. Okay, hear you.
So to go pound them 10 years old and stick their meters into me is ridiculous.
We haven't made no decision
about
that. We're
leading that way. We're heading that way right now. This has come up
the
as a
meter can go in.
Once
you don't have
in,
to read it.
Once that meter goes in, you know what's coming next. You're going to start reading it.
Well, whatever. There's going to be a board decision made, and you get to vote no or yes or whatever you want to vote on it. So we'll have this discussion in 60
days. I would agree.
Moving on.
I would like to see us move forward with some sort of discussion on how to address this. Whether it's today, tomorrow, 100 years from now.
Yeah, we're just poking sticks at it right now.
If the drought... If the drought continues, the state may force our hand anyway. So, they may move that date up.
But we will look that much better, as we found out in many times in dealing with being proactive in this business works a lot better than being reactive. And if we're already can say, it's interesting because it happened to us when we went and asked for help, right? We've been working on this and we've had several meetings and we're putting together a plan. That always helps, even if we're not implementing the plan. If we're working towards the plan, exactly. It works well with the Department of Water.
Hey, Rick, let's move on to the next.
Yes, sir.
We're running behind.
If you turn the page to the Regional Water Quality Control Board project page, it's up there on the screen. We have two relatively high cost items that are on our horizon. One of them is currently under design, and as you know, we're doing the testing for on the filtration. I'll let Greg talk about that in a second. Estimated cost of the filtration project is $7.4 million. That's a combination of three projects that were individually identified in the CIP, that it just makes sense to roll them all into one project. So I think the original number was $6 million, Greg, and then $1.5 million for one and $500,000 for the other, something like that. The other one is a denitrification project. And Greg corrected me, so for Chris and Kevin, we discussed this on Wednesday at our meeting. We were thinking that we didn't have to have the filtration online until June 30, 2019. It's actually December 31, 2017 is when it has to be online. So the filtration. So we're looking at letting the contract out next year. Design is almost complete. The other project is about a $5 million cost estimate, and both of these are in today's dollars, and that's a denitrification project. That is due by December 31, 2023. Now our permit is a five-year permit. It was entered into, I think it became effective July 1, retro to July 1, August 3rd or something like that.
December, I thought.
No.
July 1st.
Retro to July 1. So it became effective July 1 of 2014, so it's good through June 30, 2019. But in that permit, they said that there are things that you have to do in this permit cycle in order to meet the requirements of what's going to be in your next permit, the next five-year permit, which is the denitrification project. So I've been talking to Greg and talking to Dean a little bit about the issue of combining the two projects because we have to pay for them in some way, somehow, we've got to figure out how to do that. We have to have a financing plan to the state by June 30th of how we're going to pay for the filtration project. A little bit longer on the denitrification project. Greg contacted the state yesterday, Jim Marshall, Kevin and Chris, I think you attended the meeting in Sacramento and Jim Marshall was there. He's the permitting person that we work with about the possibility of delaying the start of the filtration project, but accelerating the denitrification project so that we can get our financing in place, our funding in place, how we're going to pay for it. And instead of rolling out the final project in 2023, we would do it a few years sooner than that, and we would literally do two projects back to back. The cost of money in 2023 is going to be a lot more than it is in the next couple of years. I think it'd be prudent for the board to consider doing a one-time financing plan versus two separate financing plans and crossing two hurdles versus doing it all at one time. So at this point, Gray, why don't you go ahead and hand out your handout and kind of explain what it is that you have.
Just to clarify a date as I'm handing these out, the rate plan for the nitrate is due this summer.
The financing plan?
The initial. There's a final, there's a preliminary one due this summer. So I'll go over that in just a second.
The funding plans?
How we're going to pay for it.
Right.
But, if you change your mind, it's just a plan. But the idea was to talk to the board to see if they would be willing to modify the permit if the board did decide to combine the projects together and maybe push one back a year and accelerate the other one by 3 or 4 years.
We should make everybody on South Point pay for it.
Yeah,
come
I agree.
Already.
I agree.
Move it up.
Okay, so the board in our recent permit, if you recall, when we got our permit, remember, they did two nice things. They did, the typical regional board stuff is they ratchet it up every time, right? The hot issues in the Delta, I don't know, you all read about the nitrogen issues in the Delta with the duckweed and the, water hyacinth. You know, there's a big article just last Sunday about the water hyacinth, and they're saying it's nutrients in the river. So, a lot of the nutrient comes from farmland, but they don't regulate that. They regulate us. So they come back and they added nitrogen removal as part of our most recent permit. That was a big surprise. We knew they were probably going to give us filters, and we've been planning and talking about filters for quite a while. In fact, we had them in the master plan before the permit came out because we suspected it was coming. The surprise was the nitrogen, because that was like out of the blue. And what happened is a result of a big fight that they had with SAC Regional. The Sacramento Regional spent $2 billion to go do nitrogen removal. And they've sued and fought over and lost, and now they're proceeding law. Okay, so as soon as SAC Regional fell, they just turned right around and laid it on everybody else that come up. So every permit comes up as it did.
And if you remember, that was, we followed Stockton in the permit. When we were on the same agenda that Stockton was, and Jim came up to Greg at the meeting and basically said, if Stockton falls, you fall too.
Yeah.
If Stockton gets a hall pass, you'll get a hall pass.
Yeah.
We let their lawyers fight.
And they fought it hard. They
spent probably a couple hundred grand.
Yeah, they have special studies. They had attorneys. They fought it hard. I mean, at least $200,000 to $300,000, and it went down the same way. The one thing that we decided to do is we didn't think we could beat it. So what we decided to do was negotiate, and we negotiated this. We said, okay, we see the writing on the wall, you're gonna make us do this. Throw us a carrot and give us a flow increase now, which is very unprecedented, because normally what you do is we'll give you a flow increase when you go build all this stuff. They do it the other way around. So, but what the importance of the flow increase does for us is it allows you to connect homes to help pay for it. And that's the argument we gave to them. Otherwise, it's the other way around. You got to go pay for it all, build it all. Then you can release homes to pick up the additional homes that you need to help pay for it. So
Jim Marshall looked at us and said, we're not in the habit of approving things before you build them, but he said, we're going to consider an exception with you guys.
So, rather than spend $200,000 or $300,000, fight it and lose,
we decided to get out in front of it and negotiate at least a way, a mechanism for us to work with it, which is the flow increase. So once the oxidation ditch project is done, we can certify the plant for a higher flow today, which allows you to issue will serves to other communities besides the Hoffman project. So that'll let you begin now, connecting homes. Now, of course, the economy's got to improve and people got to build homes, but that seems to be turning around a little bit. Before you, I have two pieces of paper. And the first one is a very simple summary of what's about to happen if we don't do anything, okay, and what has to happen. The second page is out of the most recent rate study. So we'll go to the back page first, which is, this is table four out of the rate study you guys did this summer.
Okay.
And what I simply highlighted in red is these are the four projects that we're doing right now. Okay. And that's what makes up these projects. So these projects, you can see, these were adjusted. The cost of these projects were adjusted in July. They went into your rate study, and they're in your capacity fee study and your capacity charges now. So that's where ultimately these projects that you're about to get paid for are going to come from. They're funded from capacity charges. Okay. The issue is they haven't built all those homes yet, right? And at some point we have legislated dates that we have to start. Okay. And we'll get into that. So the key is, this is just to anchor yourself. Where did these projects come from, and where they were done? All of these projects were identified in the master plan, with the exception of effluent. I mean, with the exception of nitrogen nitrate, and that's a new project. Okay, so, and actually, I messed this up because nitrate's on the list too. We're not doing it in this project, but nitrate got into the revenue plan. I'm just looking down the list. We added nitrate removal. It wasn't on this, I took it off this plan because it wasn't in this project, but nitrogen is in table four, the final version of table four.
But it was not in the master plan.
But it was not in the master plan, right. So nitrogen is in your capacity fee study. It was in the capacity fee study, and it's in your capacity charge now. The issue is you need the roofs to pay for it, and you can't push it all off on new homes. So some new homes are paying their fair share of it. In some cases, Hoffman's argued they're paying more than their fair share of it, but at any rate, they're paying a portion of it, and then there's going to be a portion of it that has to be paid by existing homes, okay? And that was essentially done all of this summer when we went through the rate generation program.
So you've got about $7.5 million during these four programs.
Yeah, so what I highlighted is the four things that are happening right now.
So.
And these were the things that were already identified in the master plan to take place when you take out the filters and to get our capacity to 2.35. So
the question I had though is, we're talking about new connections, capacity connections or capacity income. There won't be $7.5 million.
No, that's what I'm saying is, in the rate study, a portion of the cost, a big portion, is on new connections, but there's still some cost that you can't, you know, is spread out. So for instance, the cost of the filters is spread. Like if you look on this table, here on table four, the long one, I'll just show you. If you look to the right of that, it says existing and community connections. So let's go down to filters for a second. Filter, effluent filtration, items five, the column to the right of the dollar amount, it says existing and committed connections are going to pay 60% of that. Future connections are going to pay 40% of it. So in terms of capacity charges will ultimately pick up 40% of that cost. But the district will have to pick up 60% of the cost. If you go up to the additional UV disinfection and add a pump to the export pump station, that's 100% for future connections, because it's entirely related to expansion of the facilities. That's what gets us to the 2.35 MPD. And then the same thing with the effluent pump station modification, it's 100% on the new connections. So a lot of the new things are carried by future connections. It's just a chicken and egg thing. When did they get built versus when we have to build a facility versus where we can allow it? And the filters are kind of split.
So let me ask you, in a worst case scenario, if let's say KMP just takes 9 years to build or 8 years or whatever, where's the money going to come from in the meanwhile?
That's what we're talking about today, right now. That's what we're talking about. Okay. So the plan is ultimately a lot of this is paid for off new connections, but not all of it, and you have to come up with the money. Okay, so we're going to go on to that now. So the front sheet took, and I pulled just the projects that are in design now. So our permit required the design of the filter system be done by April of this year, April 1 of this year. We have to be done with design. That was in the NPDES permit that we received in July. Also in that permit is the filters have to be online, as Rick said, by December 31st of 2017. So we have to work backwards from that date, okay? So basically then we're gonna walk you through what do we gotta spend and when do we have to spend it. And this is the minimum, this is the minimum that we have to do. This is in motion right now. Okay, so this is, there's no duck in any of this.
With the exception, you know, of, with the exception of the denitrification project.
Right, and we're gonna talk to that where I got the dates there in a second. So there's certain things in motion right now you cannot duck. However, what Rick was talking about is, in talking to the regional board about financing and doing things, they're willing to negotiate. If we give a little on something, maybe we push forward nitrate, they're willing to relax timelines, you know, and reopen our permit. So basically, they offered to work with us to reopen our permit and maybe push back filters a little bit if we're willing to pull nitrogen forward a little bit and do that. And the impetus of that was, well, then you could finance and, you know, build one and then move into the next one in a short enough time frame to make it a single financing objective, you know, kind of thing. So there is some flexibility. Right now, these are the permit dates in, so let's just go through this. So what we see here on the front page is the same four projects. Five is the master plan project numbers on the left. Secondary effluent pump station is designed to accommodate new development. Additional UV disinfection accommodates new development. Pump to the export pump stations for new development. And then the effluent filtration project is a new permit requirement that splits 60-40, which I just showed you in the last project. So that total is $7.4 million. Total project cost. So that includes construction, design, construction services, things like that. So just so you guys can see, because you guys have always asked me before, how much are we paying for design? How much are we paying for construction? How much are we paying for construction services? Okay, so all I did is break down that $7.4 million into three pieces so you guys can see what it is and see that it totals. So at the moment, the project cost, what we're calling the Title 22 facilities. So there is a little bit of a bump increase in capacity. But generally, we're calling the Title 22 facility project, because at the end of this, you guys will be able to make Title 22 water, okay? And then we can get into what might we use that water for or something like that. But in the meantime, this is what we have. So we have $7.4 million to come up with. Okay, so at the moment, we have a reserve account that's has some money in it. It has a little over $4 million. So if we pull $1 million out of there, $1.1 million out of there, that would leave $3 million in the reserve account. And we would have about $1 million in funding.
And that's today's numbers.
That's in today's dollars, yeah. And then we also have a developer account with about $1 million in it as well. And this is already fees that we've already collected from the developments occurred in the last couple of years. So if you subtract those two, we're short $5 million, okay? So on the right here, what I've done for you is I've listed what your NPDES permit says you have to be done by, and then when do we need to go bid it? Okay, so when do we need to advertise for bids? This is what we would consider is your drop dead, you know, just your drop dead date. Because remember, we have to build it and then we need time to run it, because on December 31st, our permit can limit changes, the limit changes. So they need time to run it in practice before the limit happens. So I don't want to build a brand new facility and then walk right into a violation, right? We need time to practice with it, make sure they got it down before we go into the limit. So I gave us about 6 months for them to practice with the facility, operate it, and make sure they don't have operational issues before we hit the actual permit limit change, which occurs on December 31st. So basically what you're saying is, next year this time, we have to go out to bid. You can go out to bid sooner, and there may be reasons to do that, but there's also some timing, like maybe you wouldn't start a project in November, you know, right in the middle of winter. You'd probably wait till January. So it might be something like, hey, we go bid in May this year, give them some summertime if we wanted to build it sooner, if we wanted to get started. Because the design is done in April 1st. Like I said, the design is done April 1st. you have the construction documents in place to go out to bid and proceed at that point, but you don't have the financing in place. Okay, so we're here to talk about how we're going to finance it. Okay, so the first issue is we got to come up with $5 million in 12 months. That's the absolute minimum we have to do. Okay, if we want to be strategic about it, maybe we can renegotiate the permit. Okay, but if we're going to renegotiate that date, we got to give them something. That's what it comes down to, right? We're going to go make a deal with the regional board. Back this off, you know, back it off a year or two. Well, you got to give them something, and what they want is to accelerate the nitrogen. And so that's an option to consider. And then it comes together with how are we going to finance. You want to finance this one bond issue like you did the last one. You want to finance it in pieces. And then what can we do? Now, below here on the bottom line, we have a new thing. It wasn't in the master plan. It wasn't in the CIP. It wasn't in anything. It's in a brand new permit. And that's the denitrification facilities. We also call them the nitrate facilities. You'll see them under both names. Okay. At the moment, the board has authorized us to go out and get a pre-design of that facility done. So the people that did the master plan, Stantec, is going to do a pre-design, and that actually is due in April as well. And that's under our permit conditions where we have to have a facility plan done. Okay, so even though the denitrification facilities don't physically have to be constructed until this date, there's goals all along the way that they make us to work on it. So we don't get to ignore them, and we have to report back them all the time and say, yeah, we're working on it, you know, that kind of thing. So this year, we have to do a facility plan. So they want you to hire an engineer, get an actual cost estimate. So $5 million is preliminary. We think it's safe, but it's preliminary because we haven't done a design. We haven't thought about exactly how to do it yet. We're hiring Stantec. They're going to be starting shortly. We'll have a report on that in the end of April to say, well, okay, this is how exactly we're going to do it, and this is an official engineer's cost estimate for it. That comes in April. And then in June of this year, you have to have a preliminary rate plan done. So you have to say, you have to start thinking about how we're going to pay for it, and we got to tell the regional board how we're going to do it, okay? And then as we go along, there's other goals and other things that we have to do and submit. So first off, every single June, you have to submit an update letter of what are you doing to get this project done. So there's the generic submit something every June, okay? But then we got a rate analysis report due this summer, and then we got a progress report due this summer. And then we have a financing plan due the following summer, was what Rick was talking about. So we have a rate analysis, and we have a financing plan. You know, so rate analysis is, how is it going to affect the rates inside the district? They're going up. We got to pay. It's not in our budgets now, right? it's not in our budgets now. It's going to add $5 million. We got to pay for it somehow. The rates are going to go up. So they want a rate analysis, so no one can hide from the fact we have to raise rates to accommodate this. And then they want an actual financing plan in place the following year. And then after that, once you get on, you're supposed to be like progressing along your financing plan, and if that's a combination of just collecting, you know, new developments and doing things like that coming along. Then you end up having to stop at some point. You have a date to go to design, you have a date to go build it. It's pretty much just like the filter project list essentially done. Okay. So those are the two things facing us. These are the timelines, and we got to get them done. So the key is, on the denitrification facility, the big money's no later than 2022. But you're going to have a lot of little things along the way, no matter what, that you got to take care of to keep in compliance with the permit. So in terms of options, Rick, did you want to go over those? You want me to talk over
relative to?
Relative to if we keep them separate or if we keep them together for financing.
Well, I put up, if you turn the page in the PowerPoint, there's, Bob, you're probably familiar with a lot of these CRPs. There's just a number of different options on how to pay for things. We've got about almost $4.2 million sitting in our general reserve account. The board has a policy of maintaining a reserve balance of 30% of our annual operating account. The board has a kind of an unwritten policy that number be maintained at $3 million. But you do have the ability to drop down and dip into those, that $3 million down to whatever 30% of your annual operating.
Which is?
30% is $6 million, $6 million. $1.8, $2 million. So you could drop it. So you could use another $1 million of the three of the 4.2 that's sitting there and apply it to this project or these projects. So there's a lot of ways. You've got a lot of flexibility. The developer deposit account, the $1,023,000 that's sitting in ECC Bank right now, that's been primarily paid for by new home construction in Discovery Bay West and the few new homes that have come in the last year. Over on this side of town, it adds up pretty quickly once they start paying their fees. Hoffman is almost at their limit on the water side of the house. I think they've got 8 permits left before they hit the new water numbers, but they've still got a ways to go before they hit the wastewater numbers. And we're not going to get a lot out of, maybe another $1 million out of them, but the big number is going to come out of once Pantages and our Newport Point come online, when they start to pay. So that's, as you know, an unknown at this point in time. But we still have to build the facilities no matter what. So when I sent you the email earlier in the week saying I wasn't quite ready on some of these items, this is the financing plan is one I'm not quite ready on yet, and how, I don't have a recommendation for you yet on how to pay for them. But the one thing we want to get from you is just the overall concept, the idea of pushing back the one and accelerating the other one and doing them together. It gives us more time to raise more money through the developer fees. It gives us more time to structurally put a plan in place on how to pay for it. I was talking to some of you know Saul Rosenbaum from CSDA's finance. I'm actually having a conversation with him on Tuesday. And I've talked to him already, but we're going to follow back up. One of the ideas is, I was asking, what if we were to take our current bond, the 14.1, refinance that with this project in it, and pay that one off, and have a new one for $24 million, let's say. And he said, you don't want to do that because your cost of money is really low right now, and the cost to do that would be more. One example he gave, and this is just an example, I'm not making any suggestions or recommendations, is that you go ahead and issue a new bond if you want to do that, or a lease purchase financing agreement of some sort. And as our current bond is set up, and those of you that were on the board at the time when we rolled it out recall that one of the things we wanted to do was to be able to have a prepayment program so that if the money came in, we wanted to prepay it. I believe it's either a 3-year or a 5-year. I believe it's a 5-year term, and Saul is reviewing that right now. So after 5 years, so 2012, so 2017, we could start, as these developer fees come in, we could start paying the initial bond down sooner and lower those costs and have some form of a new plan in place. So it would be, you would call some of them, some of the investors. It depends on which one's cheaper. But you won't be able to pay the new one until there's a period of time, say 5 years out, because the investors have to have a guaranteed period of time they know they're going to be able to maintain their investments for. So once you start calling those bonds back in by prepaying them and paying them off sooner, there's ramifications on how your investors are going to look at that. So there are just a lot of different options and considerations.
So we should also, at this point, if we do decide to lower the reserves and take another 1.2 out of it, which would put you down to 4 million, and we know there's going to be a rate increase, we don't know what the effect of that's going to be, we may not need as much money as we think we're going to need. Because I would hate at this point, the only thing I would hate to do is count on Pantages or even Newport Point, because it just, there's no movement there. And it could be years before they do anything.
Well, like I said earlier, I do know that they are both progressing towards their Corps of Engineer, their fishing game permits, and they both anticipate having those later this year. And once they get those, they can start turning dirt. So whether that happens or not, it's a completely...
And with regards to Pantages, the current ownership is not going to build.
No, right. They're going to sell it.
It's
for sale.
So they'll never turn dirt. No. He's going to take his several million and be happy.
So right now you got about $4.2 million sitting in your general reserve account. And you could drop that down to about $2 million and use $2 million, and it would reduce by another $1 million the amount of money you have to pay. So,
well, how soon do you think you'll have several options for us to consider?
Well,
we can't move forward. I mean, obviously, well, what's your deadline? When do we have to know? Well, when do we have to have funding accounted? I mean, when do we have to give them a funding proposal?
Okay, well, on nitrate, the funding proposal is due, we have to do a rate study for nitrate this summer. Okay, on the filters.
You have to do the rate study, or do you just have to give them an idea of what it is we're going to be doing?
What they called it was, prepare rate analysis report. That's what it says.
Greg,
okay. So that's what we have to do. Yeah. And I guess that can be whatever we say it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we have to prepare a financial report of some kind.
Greg, I got a couple of questions. On the denitrification, design about $250,000 cost?
The design?
Design cost. You got a $5 million cost for the whole thing.
Yeah, it's about
5%?
Ballpark, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe 300, right.
And then if the ability is there to work with the state to bring those two projects together, is there a construction benefit to doing the projects together in terms of a master construction project rather than having, you know?
I think in terms of cost, you know, both projects are substantial enough
that
pays for like on-site time.
Yeah.
So I think that the benefit is really what's your cost going to be to build, and you know, it's really kind of inflation versus low interest rates right now, right? So you got really low interest rates right now. I mean, the real thing is this: you can get interest like for instance, we got, and I have a copy here, but we got a proposal. You know, so like, what's up? You know, what plan? What can we do? All right, well, we can go to a lease program, like Rick says, and you can get an interest rate, 20 years, 3.5%, sign on the dotted line, you're done, loan, right now. Okay, so we have that as an option. It's not your only option, but it's an option, okay? So if we had to come up with $5 million, you didn't have anything else together, we could do this. In terms of when you squish them together, it gives you time to build revenue, because we can delay the first project. It gives you time to build some revenue if homes come, but if those homes don't come, then you're playing the interest rate game. Well, what if interest rates start rising? Not just your cost of building, but if interest rate environment changes, that's where it's really going to make a difference to you down the road. And how long are they going to stay low versus how long are they going to go up? You know, if they go back up to 7, 8, 9%, I mean, when you did remember the solar dryers? What was your interest rate on the solar dryers when you did that?
They were 5.
Yeah, 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, even tax exempt still will go up. So you're kind of playing that game versus inflation a little bit. And in terms of on-site, I would say there is a little benefit, but both of them are big enough that I don't think you have to do it that way.
If they were tied together,
yeah,
and it made sense.
They're kind of like different pieces of the plan.
Gotcha.
One's at the front and one's over here. Yeah,
gotcha.
So.
So if they're separate, it's not an issue. There's no economy to putting them together.
Other than just you have a common contractor, but that's your only account.
We're not going to be issuing bonds anytime soon. But right now, the rates are cheaper. The interest rates are lower than they were when we did ours in 2012.
Well, you got the other
they're
issue too.
About 0.5% less. We were, Bob, for your information, we were 4.00037, if I remember. Yeah, I mean, we were upset we didn't get into the threes when we hit it that close. But now they're down into the mid threes. And you know, 2 years from now, who knows what that's going to be?
Sure. Well, the other thing too is
just even talk about it.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
And,
so
you know,
I'll just read
borrowing you. Money too early is a problem, because then you got arbitrage issues on the end if you don't have your construction project.
Well, and if you issue, you know, if you do a revenue bond like we did,
mm-hmm.
you have to have everything constructed in a certain period of time, and that might not necessarily be the case, because we're not ready to go. We can be ready to go on the filters, but not on the nitrate.
Exactly, yeah, so you don't want to get too far ahead
so
of yourself.
So just to compliment Rick, so we went out and got a proposal from Green World LLC on a straight lease. So this is a municipal lease program. It's kind of a special way to finance, where after the end of the year, you buy it out for $1. Buy it out for $1, okay? But you're not selling bonds. You're going straight to individual investors, but it's still tax-free because it's a lease. So in the California law, it's still tax-free. So, you know, you could get 10 years at 3.18%, and you could get 15 years at 3.5%, and the 20 years went out to 3.94%. Okay, so
if you weren't 10 years, does it show what the payment would be? If you have a dollar amount in there?
Yeah, so we, in this particular case, we said 6.6 million. So we assumed you weren't going to take anything out of reserves. Let's just go get 6.6 million. Okay, for 6.6 million on 10 years, the annual payment is $780,000.
What are we paying? 9 something on the bond now? 980?
No, about, no, it's about 830 or 840.
It's about 830.
The only reason I would think to do it on a lower term such as that, because we have infrastructure issues that are coming up in the next 10 to 15 years in this town.
Yeah.
And if we have this as a long-term payment, the other one is a long-term payment, and something hits us, and there's a good chance it's gonna, would we be able to afford three payments?
Yeah, well, I personally, you have options to pull the reserves. I wouldn't hit your reserve too hard, personally, because you have other things that are going to happen. I mean, you know, one thing that the town has benefited from, when you first started, when the town was first created, a lot of stuff is brand new. Okay, it was brand new. They just built Willow Lake, they just built this place, they just built the wastewater treatment plant, okay? That was 2002, gentlemen. It is 13 years, okay? It's 13 years ago. This is why, like, when SCADA's coming around, you know, like our computers. I mean, how many computers have you bought since 2012? How many computers have you bought? How many new things have you got? You know, so SCADA is the same as it was in 2002. That's why we're saying we're having to upgrade it, you know, and this thing. So personally, I would, my opinion would be borrow more SADE reserve. That'd be my opinion. Balance that, because there are going to be things, there's going to be unknown things coming along.
And I think it makes more sense, too, to do it maybe over a longer period of time. Like, you know, it's nice to have that low interest rate. But if you do it over a longer period of time, the people that are actually using that facility are paying for it, rather than it being prepaid by people, and then the future people getting kind of a free pass.
There's always, you know, when it comes to infrastructure, there's always a chicken and egg. There's always, you know, some people are paying and then they move down, right? Some people move in, didn't pay for anything, and they're showing up and using it. You know, it is the way it is. Where I thought the sweet spot was, 10 years is 3.18% is $780,000. 15 years is 3.5%, it's $570,000. Once you go to 18 years, it's still $509,000, and 20 years is like $480,000. So your real big step down is from 10 to 15 years, and you're still holding 3.5%, and then your payment's $572,000. You know, and that's on 6.6. So it was essentially then you would cover it with just what's in the developer account and the financing, and you wouldn't hit your reserves.
You know, that's a good point, because you could do that on this one project, on the filtration, and then save all the rest of the money as you build it up, and hold off on the nitrate project, and wait till you build up that bank account and see where it goes, and see if, you know,
development happens
in the time, what happens. The cost of the project's gonna, you know, it can go from $5 to $7 million, possibly, mm-hmm. or $5 to $6 million, you know, today's dollars versus 2022 dollars. So there's a lot of, you know, considerations to think about. We were just thinking about putting them together and doing one package.
But you're also going to have rate increases. Our income is going to go up.
Well, yes. And it, by the way, it's important when you start looking at a district as a long-term being, and recognize that this infrastructure, and when, you know, we came with your cost in 2011. And then we went and built in 2013, it was all 10% more expensive, you know, and that's what we got caught on. You know, we ended up buying, well, we're short $1 million. I'm $14 million, you know, we're short $1 million. That was just inflation from the time that the reports go out to where you finally get around to building and stuff like that. You have to understand, you know, when we forecast these things, they're gonna get more expensive. And when you do your rates, you have to understand you gotta bump them up a little bit every time, because 10 years, you know, you're going to build this project 10 years from now, you know, but it's going to be $7 million then. It's not going to be $5 million like it is now, you know. And so you have to plan for the inflation that occurs around you in the district, you know, as you go forward.
This board, prior to Bob and Bill's being on it, took an action that was pretty bold a number of years ago. I want to say we had almost a 30% rate increase 1 year, followed up by a 17 or 18% rate increase the next year.
We had higher bodyguards.
And
Actually, it went pretty smoothly.
No, it was. Nobody complained about it.
We had a few people complain.
Oh, it made the press.
But it's
kind of like the water meters. You're going to get some bad press when you got to do what you got to do. I just had to throw that in.
Good job.
But what that did was those revenues from those rate increases, and then we dropped them back down again, were the revenues that we raised to pay the debt on the bonds. So that there was not the need now to go out and raise rates again after that to help pay off these bonds that we're currently having to pay every year. So it raised about, you know, $850 a year over the course of a lifetime. So that was the theory behind that. So, you know, that's an option, but it's a, you know, but that's one that you guys have to deal with the consequences.
Any questions, comments, more discussion?
Sounds like, well, there's some work to do.
So the real thing is...
We know where we need to go.
We got some work to do right away, guys. Okay. So, because in June, we have to make a decision of the projects together or not. Mm-hmm. Actually, before then, because our rate analysis is due in June. So, you know, sometime in the next couple of months, we have to pull the trigger and say they're together or they're not. And then we can proceed on separate financing options or together financing options.
Rick, we pretty much know the money we're going to need. Whatever the rate increase is going to be, that's going to be to pay the note anyway. So we know what it's going to be at this point. Doing them together would probably be better.
And this will all be tied into the budget.
Well, we have a 4% rate increase scheduled this year and a 4% rate increase scheduled next year. At the end of next year, the four-year rate study comes to an end, we'll have to do another one. So we're right now in the middle of that four-year rate study that we did years ago.
Part of those 4% increases is to pay the 60%, mm-hmm. right? Because the existing users had to pay 60%. If you saw on the second page, they had to pay 60%. New development paying 40. Those rate increases are picking up those existing users to be paying their portion of that 60% of the filter project, essentially. You know, so essentially, they're not paying their full end of the debt service until two more years. You know, if you think of it that way. You know, if we start next year, if we go out to bid next year, which would be required, you know, you'll have another full year of rate revenue that happens this year before the money starts really being spent. You know, kind of thing. But anyway, those are the schedules. Those are the rates. I do have copies of this. Anyone wants, or Rick can put some other options together with it. But at some point, we have to have a mechanism for making a decision. Like we need a date we're going to decide, or something like that.
When do you feel you have enough time to put together the financing options, some of the other stuff?
Well, like I said, I'm working with Saul right now with CSDA Finance Corp, and then they also have as part of their Finance Corp, very similar to what Greg just. What's the name of the company?
Green World Finance.
And they just did a project with the city of, with the Sassoon?
Yeah, Fairfield-Sassoon Sanitary yeah. District, where we introduced into them as well for a project here.
So, you know, there's, the one nice thing about the lease purchase financing is that they don't hit our, they don't show up as debt for us because it's a lease. So if you ever wanted to go in and have an issue debt later down the road, you have the ability to do that, and if as a lease purchase, it doesn't show up as debt. So that
would be interesting.
The downfall to that is there's a prepayment penalty. If you want to pay it off sooner, you pay a prepayment penalty.
We're going to pay off sooner.
We just have to.
We're going to pay off sooner.
Yeah, I know.
When?
Okay.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
It'll be 60 to, I mean, it's got to come back to the Water Wastewater Committee. It's going to have to go to the finance, you know, group. Who's ever on that group is going to have to talk about it.
Is it June or August?
No. It'll be before that. It'll probably be March, April timeframe. And it may require a workshop or, you know, a big conversation on a light agenda.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Greg. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, so we're through with this item. We're going to take a break until 10:45. Resume. Thanks.
All right, we're back.
Let's say 2 minutes is up.
Okay.
All right, back in order, please. Staff.
Old habits, Mark. The next page, you know, it's up on the screen, just shows the 15-16 budget calendar. You know, as you know, we start working on that literally today, moving into the end of the fiscal year. I was actually talking to Bob the other day about something with respect to the calendar for the budget, and I went back and confirmed that, and Dina might like this, that we actually have two extra weeks in the budget calendar because the budget does not have to be adopted by the board until on or before July 1st. And the first meeting in July happens to be on July 1st. So we have a little bit of wiggle room in there, so that if it didn't get adopted on the 17th for some reason, if it got pushed back, then we could always push it back to July 1st. So that is a consideration. But this just kind of gives you an idea of the schedule and where we are, and what we'll be doing in the next 5 months. Any questions on that? Mm-hmm. And for those members that are on the appropriate committee, you know, if those dates, we'll work around your schedule, obviously. These are just dates we put in that seem to work well for us, and if we have to amend it by a day or a week, that's fine too. One of the things that I moved it further down in the PowerPoint, it was higher up on the agenda. I guess not. It's in the packet, is the board bylaws. It's the right behind the mission, vision, values, and goal statement. They were adopted initially back in 1998. They were amended, and I don't. Kevin asked me earlier if I remember what the amendments were. They're in that packet. Yes.
We're on different item. We're on item 7. Or?
We're on item 7, but we're going to go back to item 3 of the agenda.
Okay.
Because 3, 7, and 8 kind of fall together.
All right.
Okay. So the bylaws of the board were amended in April of 2013, and identifies what the role of the board of directors is, what the purpose is, what the purpose of our what our role is. And if you turn to page 3. As you begin your discussion, there's a highlighted section there that I highlighted in yellow. That if the board makes changes to the schedule, we would need to amend the bylaws to reflect that, because currently the bylaws state that one of the responsibilities of the board president is to appoint such committees and other working groups as confirmed by the members of the board. So I wanted to provide that to you. And then I also wanted, Carol, did you have
the handout?
The handout, yes, please. I wanted to review CSD law with you, because I noticed that in a couple of the proposals that were submitted by Bob and by Bill, they're a little conflicting, and state law does have an impact as to how the committees.
There's no other changes, though, in the bylaws that you're talking about today.
Just that one.
Just the two proposals that are upcoming?
Well, the only changes in the bylaws would be how the committees are assigned.
Okay.
The board can choose to add a rotation schedule with respect to officers as well, if you wanted to do that. So I do have it scheduled for the next board meeting on the 4th. There's a placeholder for that. But I wanted to remind the board that CSD law section, government code section 61047E 2, 3, and 4 require that the board of directors approve the
members' representation at a meeting and come back and provide information, a written report back to the board as it relates to not our subcommittees, but our external committees. So if, I know, and Bill mentioned, for example, that if there's, to eliminate some of the committees, but if there's a need to attend, then a board member can attend that without having that pre-authorization.
But our bylaws comply with this.
Yeah, we fully comply with state law.
Totally.
That's why.
It's already written in there. Where you telling?
That's why in January we bring this to you at the first of the year, and that is, you are then given that blanket authorization to attend those meetings as necessary. So we don't have to come back at each month and give you pre-authorization to do so. For example, if you wanted to attend a CSDA conference, we would come back then and give you the pre-authorization. We'd come back and give them an agenda report, probably put it on consent and say, you know, these two board members or the group of board wants to attend this conference, and you have to provide pre-authorization to that in compliance with this section of the government code. So I just wanted you to have that information as you go through this conversation that you're gonna have.
Just for historical purposes, and I wasn't on board at the time, but I believe Mark was, this is when John Stovall was our attorney, and this system was put into place to comply with CSD law, because there were some issues with regards to people going to meetings and or more than two or three going to a meeting and then not having the board permission prior to that meeting. And so they said the best way, our attorney said the best way, who was New Miller and Birdsley, it was just John Stovall was the attorney at the time, said the best way to do that is to just make these assignments at the beginning of the year, and then you have blanket coverage throughout that year and you just redo it every year.
Thanks for that historical background.
All right. Okay, so as it relates to your item number 7 and 8, staff's going to sit back and listen.
Well, let's, all right, so item 7, is that what package is that, Rick?
Let's see here. What's our command? There is not a package,
all right,
but there is an email from Director Leet that was emailed to the board and was. And is on your table. It's a memo to the board from Bob Lee.
Yeah.
It discusses two items. One, the board officer rotation proposal.
Okay.
I believe it's item 7.
Okay.
Right.
Perfect.
And then item 8
is the second half,
which is the committee structure,
right,
which has both Bob, and there's a proposal from Bill as well.
And in our bylaws that address what's our current rotation schedule, do we have any anywhere in the bylaws that says exactly how it's done? I think it does very specifically.
It discusses that each year there is a, it doesn't discuss how it's done, it just discusses that amongst the board that there will be a president, vice president, and president pro tem.
Perfect, all right, thanks. All right.
Okay, you want to do item number 7 first?
Hey, Bill, or Bob?
Yeah.
Can you move the mic on there?
Oh.
Make sure we can, because it is on.
There we go. Yeah, my proposal is effective for January 2016 is we begin a rotation process for the position, for the officer positions of the board. The proposal is this, is the second page of the following the memo, and it says that, you know, in order to be considered to be the board president, that a director would have to serve at least 12 months on the board, get some experience to see what transpires. And that the board presidency would be assigned to the director who has met that minimum service requirement, and that it be the person who has been the longest since they have served as president. The person next in line would then become the vice president and so forth. There's a tie-breaking procedure in there, and what this will allow is the board to just automatically rotate every year. We wouldn't have to have any, you'd almost have to have nothing more than a vote that we concur with what the tenure requirement has been met and which director had not served as president the longest, and that there would be an automatic chair succession at that point. And you can see down below, you know, how it's been done since 2010. And then you can kind of extrapolate out what it would look like in the future. So I think this way it would sort of it would take all the discussion out of it, make it a very simple process, allow an equal opportunity for all directors to participate in a board officer position. Should a board member decide that they do not wish to be president, they can certainly take a pass. It's a voluntary operation here, and if you decide not to volunteer, that's just fine. I'm sure other people would love to step forward. I guess I'd open up to questions if anybody has any.
Chris, I have a couple of comments. I'm not opposed to a rotation. The Board of Supervisors does it this way. LAFCO mm-hmm. does it this way. Not this way. The LAFCO process. I've never seen it done particularly this way. My only comment on this is that the way it's set up, it's very possible that every 2 years you would have somebody that has just been elected to the board serve as president, because in their second term of service they would have fulfilled the 12-month and have not served as board president. So therefore every other year you've got somebody with very little experience serving as board president, set in stone.
Well, my suggestion to this is not 12 months, 24 months. So that, let's take that example. Somebody gets elected, two people get elected, whatever. You would then, your third year, you would be president. You go 12 months, and let's say two people came on at the same time. And one of them got a couple more votes than the other one, so that'd be first. So let's say that the person who got the most votes, their second year they would become vice president. Their third year they would then become president. And the second person, his second year they would become vice president. Third year he'd become vice president, and then the fourth year he would be president.
Can I ask you a question? What would happen? I mean, I like the idea of a rotation. I'm totally in favor of it. What would happen on an election year if all three incumbents won out?
Yeah.
That's what I think. What I was
we
thinking.
We can work through
they,
that.
They have this discussion.
You know, you'd still have that 24-month thing because you still have two members.
There's still two members.
What I'm thinking to me, and because, well, again, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Dude, the downfall of that, if it ever did have three people, let's assume that the third person didn't want to run for election again, or, you know, didn't get voted back in. He may miss being president because the time ran out. Yeah, he would be president in the fifth year. Well, if three people came in at the same time.
Can we just assign presidents for the next 3 years? Because we're all here.
Can I give you some information? Yeah. Remember that he who makes the rules can break the rules.
Right.
So a future board is not necessarily beholden to this. They can come back and the board can come back and they can change the bylaws. They can have a temporary abatement of this section for a period of time, similar to what Jerry Brown did when he became mayor of Oakland. There can be certain things that can take place. I just wanted to give you that heads up.
I just want to state that obviously there's a desire among the board, at least members probably the majority of the board at this point, to do something towards this direction. Bill came on, saw what Bob saw, and had a proposal last year that was not exactly the same, but on the same thinking, making it more equitable, taking the politics out of it. Bob has now done this. With that 24-month option, you take out my concern at that point, because my only concern is that 12 months may just not be enough for somebody that doesn't have any parliamentary experience.
They haven't been prior on the board.
I did, but you know, who knows?
I agree, and that's why I think the 24-month deal. The second year you become vice president, the third year now you're president. So you've got 3 years.
So then with that you designed it. Are you
I hadn't heard that till today, but I think that makes sense.
That was
12 months
concern,
you become vice president, 24 months you become president.
You thought that too, though, Bill. You thought that was
And then keep in mind, in some cases, you get somebody who doesn't want to be president.
So he might say,
I just can't. You got something else going.
Roll with it, and then that way you've got president, vice president, and
I guess a damn good
president pro term or whatever
so
it is.
How would that lay out for the next 3 years? What's that schedule?
Exactly the way it was laid out anyway?
He becomes, I would become president.
No, Bill, then Bob, then me.
That's right. He goes boom, boom, boom.
And I'm still serving, so I get one more term to serve as president.
Yeah.
And so that's probably the way it would have worked out anyway, so
you
know, I'm not...
Right, but it
takes the politics, absolutely.
It takes all politics out of the position. Position.
So then I would like to give board direction to bring that proposal back. It's on the agenda for next
meeting. No, this one is not. This doesn't take effect until 2016.
Oh,
that's right.
So we have plenty of time.
But this could come back with 24 months and 12 months.
Yeah.
24 months for president, 12 months for vice president. This comes back. And let me add one thing. I did not mention the president pro tem.
Well, it'd be because, it'd be the third.
Is it just the third? So if you could just work the...
Well, you know,
I can't imagine ever get to a point where the president pro tem would really come into play. But
It'd
have to be only three board members for that to even come into play. It couldn't be the president at the same time. Right?
Well,
the proposal should include that piece as well. And then I think that's good. And let's try
the right thing to do. It is the right thing to do. Because it's been, let's face it, since the days of the inception of the sport, it's been a popularity contest. It's been who holds the power since goes back.
Always divided the board. It's been divided against the board.
And that's what I would like to get rid of. And it just, and I think Bob, we all agree, I think.
Yeah,
so put it on the agenda.
Just be done with it. And if a future board, and we're not around, wants to do something different, let them have it.
Exactly.
All right.
Good.
Next. That's really good. Thank you.
The next item is Bob has a proposal, on the committee assignment schedule.
Right.
As does Director Pease. And I will let you gentlemen have at it.
Me or you?
I don't know, finish with you. But
I don't know, you have the seniority, so that seniority seems to be a lot here, so I don't want to step on any toes.
Well, I'll start. Along the same line as the president vice president thing, I think it takes some of the, again, politics out of it or whatever, to have each of the board members have an equal share of the committee responsibilities on the regional level and on our subcommittee responsibilities. So my proposal would be to break down the subcommittees that we have now, and I go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We got 8 of them. There's a way to combine 3 of them together, and we can end up with 5 subcommittees. And that would allow each board member to be on 2 subcommittees. So we just think, I'm not talking regional at the moment, just talking the our board subcommittee. So my proposal would be to take the budget committee, combine it with the investment oversight subcommittee and the public financing subcommittee, and if we have to have a separate meeting of those, fine, but you put those 3 together, and that's the budget committee. 2 people would be assigned to that. I would just eliminate the communications subcommittee. You'd still have a community center subcommittee, landscaping, parks and recreation, and water and wastewater. And that would give you 5 committees. Everybody would be on 2 of them. And they can be rotated every year also based on the fact that, I think Bob's gonna get into that a little bit. There's a way to rotate through that or have an opportunity to choose what committee you want to be on. The same thing on the regional committees. If we took those and condensed them down to just 5, then each board member would be assigned 1 of those, and you'd have an alternate. Somebody else would be an alternate, but you'd end up with just 5. Everybody's got 3 committees that they're responsible for.
Can I ask one question, Bill?
Sure.
Rick, doesn't the public financing committee have to be a separate committee? Was that part of the?
It could be the same.
No, it could be. It technically
we have to meet.
Technically, the subcommittees are really, while you appoint yourselves to them, truly they're really my invitation to those that you've assigned to them to come meet with staff as we need to vet things and go over things and keep you updated on things so that you can come back to the rest of the board and say, hey, we met on this, we talked about it. They're not really board committees as much as they are staff committees, and there's a distinction with that. It has to do with the Brown Act.
I think the perception is different, but okay.
I think that they are staff. They are staff driven for the purposes, for certain purposes. Otherwise, if they become what are known as standing committees, mm-hmm. Regardless of how many board members are in them, they are subject to the Brown Act and the public and 36-hour notice.
Very expensive. And
sure. Okay. Yeah. So I worked with Dan Schroeder on this 2 years ago because we had this discussion, he and I.
All right.
And I think a couple of the board, maybe the board president at the time, had this conversation. Therefore, they are, while they're board subcommittees, they are really subcommittees for staff to work and to discuss things.
Okay.
So that they can then come to the full board.
Well, so I understand. Okay.
I hadn't seen what Bill had written and talked, but I'd already really looked at what Bob and the selection process, I think, is something we can work on. I don't have a problem in discussing that. Reduction of the amount of committees. When I started here, I think there was only four committees, but we didn't have a community center. We didn't have some of these other things. I don't have any problem with maybe consolidating some of the committees. I do have a problem with eliminating completely the communications committee, because there's entities within the community that are talking about communicating with the public, outreach. And so I think that there's probably still a need for that, whether it falls under another category or it remains a subcommittee of its own, open for discussion. The need to reduce both of these to five so each person could serve on two is baffling to me, because lessening it doesn't increase the opportunity for you to serve. The more there are, the more opportunity there is for you to serve. And I do notice that you, I don't know, I'm not sure if this is a compliment or if you're unhappy, Bill, but you mentioned the fact that I'm on five and you're only on one, mm-hmm. and I take that as a compliment. I'm fully engaged with my constituents. I want to serve them every opportunity I have on any opening that I can. And I did go back and listen to the tape of the meeting we had, and you didn't volunteer for any other except for the water subcommittee. So you have to put your name out there and want to be on it to get on it. So everybody has the opportunity to be on at least a couple of committees. I'll give, there's several, couple, at least two or three here that I only took because nobody else said they wanted them. So,
The reason that I'm suggesting this is, again, to eliminate what we're just talking about. And you can do that through a rotation. And my suggestion would be that when the, just like we're doing on the president and the vice president thing, how you'd make these selections would be the president, whoever that's going to be this year, and the vice president and the president pro tem, and then based on elections, that would be your rotation. So the president would select which one of those five he wants to be on, the vice president would select, and that's going to give a rotation through these.
Yeah, you can I kind of like the way Bob put it together a little bit better than
that. Before we get too involved in deciding Bill's proposal,
right.
Could I lay mine
out?
And so we can see them side by side.
But just real quick, we all got different backgrounds,
different experiences, and different
ways of doing things. And there's interests that I've got that are different from yours and yours. And
right.
So there's different levels. You know, we all are engaged in our goals for the town, but some things are more of a, you know,
One other thing.
And I don't want to be bumping somebody out that's got a special background or a technique or something that we can.
The only other issue I have with the rotation is some of us chose committees because of when they meet.
Exactly.
And what for me, like, I'm working full time. I know a couple of us are, so I can't do a Thursday 1 o'clock meeting. I can't do the. So I took ones that I know that I can attend every single meeting. So that I don't know how you get around.
Yeah. Well, before we talk about who gets assigned, can we kind of get through the discussion of what's to be assigned to? And I looked at it a little bit differently than Bill did. When I looked at the regional committees, having not had a lot of experience, I didn't come up with a proposal to make any changes in that area. I mean, I saw some what I thought were some opportunities. I mean, I would have, if I was the emperor of the world, I would have said, oh, take code enforcement and LAFCO, they're kind of land use, organizational kind of committees, you know, a little bit of that stuff. And maybe you combine those things. The other committees, I'm not sure, like regional transportation, how often or even if they meet. But anyway, I sort of left those alone. So be that as it may. Then on the board subcommittees, I kind of looked at it a little bit like Bill did, except I took sort of the finance issues of budget, investment, and the financing authority, lumped those together and said, whoever the two people that are on that committee would have their arms around the finances of the district, of the town of Discovery Bay. Parks and Recreation, the Landscaping Community Center, I threw the communications in there because it seems like a lot of it has to do with the community center right now and the recreation and parks efforts. So I just, that seemed like a logical grouping to me. Water and wastewater, no change there. That seemed to be a solid way to approach. But I wanted to add a committee. It would be sort of an ad hoc committee because I don't know how long it would last. And that has to do with the waterways, the weeds, and so forth, dealing with Rec 800, dealing with the county, dealing with the state, dealing with the feds. I think we need to get a much more visible presence by the town of Discovery Bay. Now it's kind of ad hoc and people kind of jump in and out of this thing, but I think this would show a real commitment from the town of Discovery Bay to work on those issues, since the waterways and people that we got a very large percentage of our constituents here that live on the water, and we have people that come in and use the facilities who are from out of the area that come here because of the water, is that the town of Discovery Bay have a real impact on those efforts. So that was sort of my, a little bit different than Bill's, but again, kind of consolidating. I didn't do the 5 and 5 math, but that's sort of the way I looked at it.
Aren't we outside of our, I know it's a big issue, and I thought the supervisor and assemblyman were working on those. But,
well, there's a lot of people working on it, but I'm not sure who's affected, and I'm not so sure that people that live in Brentwood really, that are not water skiers, are not
sure.
Boat, are not bass fishermen, are all that concerned with it. So that's kind of a nice thing.
Will this be more of a, maybe a... Yeah, this would be like an ad hoc committee.
Well, I think until you solve the problem, the committee exists. Once the state has, I think you got to go pound on the state.
I think they need to report to us on a monthly basis what's going on.
Well, I think so, yeah. So I think if we have a dedicated committee that's going to the state.
I did take some time to review and have some conversation about this proposal with regards to the consolidation and everything else, and it does kind of follow along with what Bill's thoughts were with it. And I do think that although we may have all at some time attended water weed meetings, we may have all at some time met with our supervisor and with our assemblyman and listened to the Department of Boating and Waterways. I mean, I know some of us have. I think it wouldn't be bad to have a voice. Rick's going to check into a Prop 218 issue, but I don't really think it's going to apply. To have a consolidated voice representing the people, and I think the people are coming to us not understanding what our responsibilities are, and I think we need to know more.
Everybody I've talked to out there is saying, well, what are you guys doing?
On the ground.
And the answer to this, well, it's not our problem, is not a very good answer.
Yeah, it's saying, hey, our responsibility ends at the end of the rocks, doesn't help any.
Yeah, but if our responsibility is to go beat up on the state, well, then people are saying, hey, great, go beat up on them.
So as you move forward with, if you're going to move forward with this, can I make a couple suggestions?
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you're going to consolidate some committees, I think that the budget subcommittee, the investment oversight subcommittee, and the public financing authority subcommittee consolidation makes sense. On the parks and recreation side, I would have the community center subcommittee and the and what's called park and recreation, and just call it recreation subcommittee.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
That way you keep the community center as a subject matter, and recreation, they go hand in hand, not just with the community center, but with all of our recreational facilities that we have or may have in the future. And personally, from the communication side, I would prefer that we keep that so that Kevin's right, there's a discussion going on right now that has to do with signs and maybe putting up some community signs in different locations.
The church is asking about it.
Yeah,
there's
a new foundation
that's been wants to get involved. We need to
take
leadership on that, or else we're going to have other people trying to take leadership. They can't, but they will try.
Okay. So if I were to amend my proposal here and move communication to a separate committee, is that more in line with what you think?
I think
If it's in that park and rec community center function, I'm okay with that, so long as, but if you want to keep it separate, I'm okay with that too.
For the next year, it's the same two people on the committee anyway. Chris and I are both on the community center park. You know, this is for 2016 again, right?
I would do it tomorrow.
Well, this would, no, this is to, I'd do it from tomorrow. What I understand, this is to take effect on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So that you, so,
so the whole choosing process there, okay. Mm-hmm. A couple of things then. First of all, as I discussed with you, Bob, when you came in today, mm-hmm. I would eliminate number five from your proposal, because that's assigned not a, by the, that's not our choice, that's mandated by...
Well, wait, stop. You've jumped ahead to an item that we haven't discussed yet.
Well,
I want to discuss what Bill and I have a thing on committees, not how they're assigned.
Oh.
All right, cool. Tell us about committees.
I'd like to resolve the committee discussion first, then we'll figure out how to put people in the different spots.
Well, right now you have four committees. Right?
I do, yeah. Now, if you want to have communications as a separate committee, I'm okay with that too.
What was your fifth one?
I kept the, I had the community center separate from park and recreation.
Oh.
But I eliminated the communications.
Right.
So, if you combine the park and the community center together and reestablish communications, you still end up with five.
Yeah. Is that okay?
I think five works because there's five of us, and then we each can be on two.
I'm not too concerned about that part of it, but whatever. Do they need to be...
Well, communication could be more than just parks and recreation. That
I think
that was
should
the
be
only
standalone,
thing.
Separate communication.
Okay. I can live with that.
Because I don't know.
And if you combine
just the channels, I don't know how we're going to establish that.
Well, you got the communications could be about water and sewer rates. It could be about the park and recreation.
Or add the
whatever
you
the
do
most.
That, I follow. Yeah.
That's kind of PR.
Oh, okay.
It's
broader than just parks and rec, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Chris.
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry. What was that?
He wants to break communications out because it's broader than just the community center.
So that'll give you five committees.
Okay.
Which
one? The committees would be the Finance Committee, Park and Recreation
Let's
Committee, Water and Wastewater, and then the Ad Hoc Water Waste Committee.
Can we drop the, just call it Recreation
That's
Committee?
That's fine, I don't care.
Right.
Call it whatever you
well,
want.
Well, you call it Parks and Rec and it brings landscaping into play.
Yeah, I don't want to bring that
in
there.
Well, it isn't.
Well, landscaping is different
than... landscaping.
Landscaping is separate than rec.
It needs to be separate.
I mean, landscaping is a separate function.
But the committee could still deal with both of those functions. You got two bright people that can probably figure it out.
Yeah, that's
and
is,
you could just bring
that is absolutely the call of the five.
Okay.
Who's on the landscaping committee
the
right now?
The majority of the landscaping is in the parks.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys met yet? That's the landscaping committee,
it's,
right?
It's the
no.
It's the common areas, the boulevards. It's
okay.
It's a big.
It's every place that stuff grows on.
Yeah.
That we maintain,
including weeds.
Flipper.
Okay, so then I'm confused. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
So the
finance, we don't. Didn't, finance is a go.
Finance is budget,
okay.
Investment, and public.
Perfect. Water and wastewater is good.
Is good.
The ad hoc weed is good. Now let's
communications.
What are we doing with those?
Then communications would be a committee by itself.
Okay.
And then there would be a committee that deals with parks, recreation,
make it all
landscaping.
Okay.
All the green stuff and the place.
And
stuff.
That gives you five.
That gives you five
okay.
committees.
So parks.
The community
and landscaping.
Center.
Parks, recreation,
parks,
landscaping.
Landscaping. Parks, recreation, landscaping, all in one.
All in one.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no point.
Okay.
That's easy to cover.
Do we have consensus?
Sure.
I believe so. You have five committees, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Good luck. I can say is, like, if we get buried down with, like, master plan projects and stuff like that, The two people are going to need some help, so.
Well,
that's
when
you start splitting
if you think
the park.
We don't meet that often. I mean, it's
I know.
It's
you guys don't meet at all, so I get it.
No, we meet when we're
going to have right. two heavyweight committees, and you're going to have a couple lightweight, or three heavyweight committees.
And you meet when there's a necessity, and when you deal with it. I mean, it's not like, it's like landscaping. If she's got to be under control,
right,
there's no issues.
So we'll add to the next agenda.
Okay.
All right. Agreed?
Okay. So.
Now we move back one. Okay.
To the... How these committee assignments are established. And what I'm proposing is we do it like the NFL draft. Is that we go around, you know, there's going to be, for the board subcommittees, there's two people each on five committees. So you got 10 slots to fill. And the regional committees, you've got two slots to fill on however many there are. and we go around the table and say, Kevin, pick one. Mark, pick one. Pick one. So you can pick one that meets in the evenings. Chris can pick one because he really loves, you know, whatever the topic is. And we go around the table so that everybody has an opportunity to serve in a capacity that is of interest to them, that's tied into their knowledge, skills, abilities, to what their interests are and so forth, and that, you know, there's some opportunity for maybe some rotation occasionally. May or may not happen. It's going to depend on what people choose. If you come around and there's really not anything of interest, pass on it. Let somebody else pick that stuff. If we get to the end and you say, geez, you know, I really didn't get on that XYZ committee, and Mark got on it, maybe he and I can horse trade something later. But give us an opportunity as five equals to equally distribute the assignments based on interests and abilities.
Can I comment?
I hope so.
I think it's a good idea. I think it.
You had a good idea in the break, so
well,
you could
here's
bring
the
that
only
up.
Yeah, number five I want to eliminate, yeah. But we already talked about that. Here's my only caveat to agreeing to what it is. I think that it should be that there should be two drafts. A draft for the regional committee appointments and a draft for the subcommittees. And one of the reasons is for that is because of the five thing that Bill's talking about. If you mix the upper in it, then you don't have that same opportunity to have
I agree.
Keep them separate.
Keep them separate.
Because they are two exactly separate things. One of them is our involvement within legislative community bodies where they have asked us to participate a lot of times. And the bottom one is our self-governing. And so I think we should have two drafts, one for the top board and one for the bottom board. Mm-hmm. Other than that, and eliminating number five, I'm behind you 100%.
Well, on number five, you're just eliminating the last clause because the board president and vice president are assigned to that.
Yeah, so they're assigned to it, but it doesn't go against their choices.
Well, yes. you keep, yeah.
That just happens.
They are automatically
assigned. That's just automatically
assigned. Well, you'd have, there's five regional committees. Well, one extra one would be the sixth, which would be...
No, there's more than five.
There's more than five.
All the committees that are listed there.
Well, I know, but I'd like to give them five also. But
well, I don't... Why would we want to choose to not interact with community agencies that are asking us to interact with them?
I don't know. I don't know if they ask. But anyway, see that as a minute.
And they... We don't have to be there. And we know this. I served on that wonderful committee called the Regional Transportation Agency before Bill did. I think I went to two meetings in about 18 months.
I'm
because
still they, trying to get to one because they keep canceling.
And they have them at night and they're over in Martinez.
Right.
And
I went to one
Pittsburgh,
once.
And they continually ping all of us on that. I mean, I'm involved in it too.
And that's fine, but I think we should still have the opportunity to go. Why
somebody should
we
represent us there, you know, at the table.
It doesn't cost anything to have that opportunity.
And plus you can go to any, I mean, you can go to any outside thing. Like aviation, you go, you enjoy going, you go.
Yeah, but I also can officially represent the board when they ask me questions about the board. Not give opinion, or not, you know, but I can. I'm an official representative of the Town of Discovery Bay, which makes a difference when you're there. You're not just a member.
I think if a board member wants to go to a meeting that's not on our list,
oh yeah,
should be terrific.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, under our bylaws, if it's pre-approved, you're compensated for it. If you don't want to be compensated, you can go to any darn meeting you want.
Well, speaking of that, why don't we have that discussion too? Because I'm confused on all that. But can we finalize this draft thing?
Okay.
So the rotation selection. I have it.
You're not clear on that. Okay. So Rick, why don't you bring it back? Well, we've set for the next agenda on the subcommittee.
I will have an amendment to the bylaws that will remove that one highlighted item that gives the president the authority to appoint with board concurrence, and will draft something for your consideration, and it will be in track changes and in strikeout and underlines. You see what's out and what's new, and you can. It has to be adopted by resolution, so you might want to wordsmith a little bit, and it might have to come back at another meeting. But it will be on the agenda for Wednesday night, and once it's approved, you can then make your appointments based on the new bylaws.
And this would be a two-tier draft, one for regional,
well, why don't
one
we,
for...
Well, since we're in a workshop, why don't we talk about that?
Well, my suggestion on that, being that we're in agreement on the president and vice president rotational procedure that gives everybody time to go through, my suggestion would be, as far as this draft, you know, we've got the five committees, subcommittees. So who's going to be the first one? Instead of a lottery type of thing, my suggestion would be whoever's president, they get the first choice, whoever vice president.
That throws a whole monkey wrench into it with regards to whether we have new people on the board or not new people on the board.
Well,
it could extend when you have an opportunity to be on a committee that you want to be on because of the fact that three new people came on the board. I like the way it's written. What's wrong with the way it's written? The most tenured individual that has the senior, that's the way the Congress and that's the way the Senate do it. You get on committees based on how much time you've put in.
But what if you have somebody has some interest and they don't have the senior? They're never going to get on one of those committees.
Raise their hands.
Well, but that's the advantage of having served your community for 8 or 10 or 12 years.
But there's also the advantage to let everybody have an opportunity to process and get on different committees.
And then every year that breaks up continuity with your relationship with those committees.
Well, I would say if you wanted to do it by seniority, then you don't have a two-phase draft. You throw everything out there for people to do. If you're going to break it between regional and the board subcommittees, I think seniority causes a lot of gridlock in terms of getting new blood and new ideas and new thinking into areas. And ability of people to work in different areas.
If you do it by seniority, the problem with that is you're going to have the same people in the same committees every year.
No, you don't, because there's
well, no. You're going to get one shot. Now a less senior person is going to get number two.
There's four other people to get a shot.
What if you're still the most tenured member next year?
You there's two positions. You only get one shot. No, each committee has two positions on it.
Right.
Correct, but you're going to get two choices.
I get the first and the sixth choice.
Correct.
Actually, Mark would.
Or whatever. Whoever. Somebody gets the first and the sixth. I didn't mean me first. I meant the position gets... Or I get the second or the seventh. I mean, I don't get two choices in a row.
Right.
So, no, but what I'm saying is if you took... Let's say you took wastewater. You were the most tenured member in this case.
Okay.
I am. Let's say with you.
Right.
You took wastewater. Next year, you're still the most tenured. I want wastewater again. And the year after, I want wastewater again.
Sure.
It doesn't give other people on the board.
Well, because there's two spots on that committee.
Well, but if you had
if you got the first and the two people who have the most seniority, pick water and wastewater.
Okay, I'm a little confused. Bob, you're arguing against your proposal now. I'm a little confused.
Let's take you and I for instance. We're the two most. I'm the most tenured. You're the second.
Right.
So let's say next year I say I'll take wastewater. You're number two, you say, I'll take wastewater as second committee.
Right.
Next year we come back, you and I are still the most tenured, that's I'll take wastewater again, you say, I'll take wastewater again.
Okay.
For the next 3 or 4 years, nobody on this board will get to be in wastewater except you and I.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think what they're trying to do is find a way for everybody to serve on the committees they want to serve on. And if you like...
Are you available? Are you available to me?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you cover that. That's the issue that...
Well, I think... If you're volunteering for something, you're going to have to make yourself available.
Yeah.
Well, I can't go at 1 o'clock to Sacramento on a Thursday, Bill.
I understand, but if you can't make that meeting to go to Sacramento, that's a special something. One of the other guys could fill in for you.
Sure. But there's some of that only meet on Thursday. Some meet on 1 o'clock on Thursday in Martinez. Some meet. I have an auction. I'm in San Jose every Thursday.
Well,
so to me, I can't. There's no way I can serve on that committee.
Yeah. Well,
but I can serve on a landscaping committee. I could serve on this one or this one or this one. That's what's happened here. In the last few years, we've all taken the committees we can serve on.
Right. Or we
haven't had
a limit on it. Just say, you know, hey, you can't serve more than 2 years.
No, it's definitely not going to fair. It's not going to
step
fair
off for a year or something.
By any means.
Well, if you just do it with whoever is president is the first choice and vice president the second choice, et cetera, it rotates.
Every year.
Yeah.
They do rotate every year. So
that's why I like that proposal.
It rotates every year, and then you...
Yeah,
and if whatever, I don't know. I still think there'll be continuity on the committees. I mean, staff is going to be able to interact with all of us at different times anyway.
If I can just give a perspective from my side of the house.
It's your meeting, right?
Yeah.
It's your committee.
The thing that's important to me more than anything is continuity. Because, and I'll use the Water Wastewater Committee as an example because that's our primary function. since I've been here, the 5 years I've been here, I've had three members on that committee over the 5 years. I've had Kevin, Ray Tetro, and then when Ray passed, Chris took that spot. And there's been Kevin has grabbed that by the horns and is as probably more knowledgeable than anybody about what's going on down there, with the exception of Greg Harris, Virgil, and myself. Okay, and I would say Chris would probably be a distant, you know, because he's still not, he didn't go through the processes that we went through when we did the master plans and that sort of stuff. And so he's still kind of catching up. That's a very important function, and that continuity, from my perspective, is very important.
And those relationships at the state level, I mean, we're doing things at really high levels, and it's continuity with those guys too. I mean,
I understand what you're trying to do, but also from our perspective, it's important that continuity remain in place. Bill and what's your name? Mark.
Dr. Mark.
And Ray were on the budget committee, and then when Ray passed, you took over that position. And that continuity has been there. It's been very good. You know, Mark's been on the budget committee, I think, since as long as I've been here, since we created it. And he has the most tenure in there, and it's nice to have that continuity. I'm just throwing that out as you make your decision, or as you discuss it.
I think it's good to have everybody get involved with those meetings, and it's been a good chance to give direct quick Q&A with the staff members that are all in that area or that for that committee. And I think we've had to go through some huge milestones before we even get it to the board, because there's a lot of different routes to go, but to flush out not pre-screen, but yeah, kind of pre-set up what's going to happen, it helps a lot with you guys, or the rest of the board, and how much time we've got. And we have a lot of faith in each of us that we're going to take on these things and make sure our goals are lined up. But I think the continuity thing is good. I like having a rotation in. I would love to see somebody get in there and get more experience. But I think a 2 year, if they want to do like a term limit on it for these committees, I think it's good. But I think the rotation, it would be good to have. But we need.
I'd like one
year at a time is too much to change the staff interactions and just all the
learning curve would be.
Would it be helpful then? Let me amend my proposal. And picking up on Bill's suggestion of having the selection process by president, vice presidents, most senior, and then work your way down, and make it a 2 year appointment, that we make these appointments to the board committees for 2 years. Gives you some continuity, but also it's nice that Kevin knows a whole bunch about water and wastewater, but wouldn't it be nice if he knew it, and he knew it, and he knew it, and he knew it?
I know.
Yeah,
so you have five really smart people.
Right? I mean,
well, I would like to get involved in it as much as anybody else, because that's what we do. But
can I just ask something? So if you do the 2 year, before that 2 year term is up, 6 months in advance, people that are interested in the committee start coming to the meetings.
You can't.
No, you got a brown hat.
But even if you're just silent,
can't be in the room.
Won't be there.
Good idea.
Then it's a way to catch you up, and you don't start. Yeah.
Well, the other nice thing is, if you get into a 2 year rotation, and let's say that's the year that I'm going out, my second year, another person gets a shot to come in. If you wanted in, and I was in with, let's say Bob and I were in, and I go off the board, and you say I'll take his spot.
So if we did it for 2015, 2016, then it will get into the rotation also of elections.
Absolutely. Or if there's two committee members, are they all going to go on and off at the same time, or are we going to do opposite? Or?
Well, what you have is, you have a 2 year cycle. And 2 years from now, you do the draft again.
And if it turns out that you want a different committee, you can do horse trades.
That's right. You get horse trades.
At least it's scheduled.
Your ticket.
It's laid out.
I like the idea of 2 years.
I'm kind of warming up to that too, because then you
get
that
continuity. You start meeting with somebody. You know, we go through the yacht club. You have a rear commodore who meets with a bar for 1 year and disappears.
And they disappear right now. I know.
So, even though we're not a yacht club or a bar.
Thank God.
Just too much.
We should have a bar.
All right.
All day. All right. So do we want to work these assignments out right now? So we agree on 2 years?
You can't do it now.
Wednesday.
But if we can, if we, if we have,
at least talk about it. It's a workshop.
Let's talk about it.
Cannot make a.
How are we going to do the rotation?
Well, here's what I hear, and let me see if you all heard what I heard, is that we would do it. We would have two-year appointments to all board committees. So it'd be 2015, 2016, however we sort this all out. We will have, after this process is approved, we will do a draft amongst ourselves at a publicly noticed board meeting, which would be next Wednesday. And we would start with the president making a selection, the vice president making a selection, the most senior person making a selection, the next most senior person, and then the last person. And we'll keep going around till all the boxes are filled. And it would be for appointments for 2015, 2016. The president and vice president are already on that East Bay or East County Water deal.
What's the year?
Yeah, whatever year that is.
And at the end of it, if it turns out you're on a committee you don't want to be on, and he's on a committee he doesn't want to be on, you can swap.
You can horse trade whatever you want.
You've got two drafts.
Well, you'd go through the town subcommittees. You come through once, come through twice. There you got that's picked, and now we go on the regional ones. And
so we do the board committees first, and then we do the regional committees.
How do you put the order of the committees?
The problem with that is
all the squares are up there. You put your name on the
squares. Yeah, but with regards to the regional committee, there's only one board member goes.
Pick your spot.
Alternate.
Well, you have an alternate.
Pick your spot. Pick your spot.
We already did, right? We already picked those, right?
Like we do now.
Well, it's real simple. We'll just be doing it by a draft, that's all.
Yeah. So it sounds like nothing would change on the regional appointments.
Yes, it would. Because we're going to do a draft.
Oh, I see. We're going to do the
board. We're going to sit down and do the board. We'll fill out the 10 slots for the board, then we'll fill out the
years and years of relationship building on with public officials and such, and you just want to throw it out the window. That's fine. Whatever. Is that how important?
Kevin, I think you're absolutely wrong. I think you're going to end up with five people. Listen to me. I think you're going to have five people that will have relationships rather than one person that's going to have a relationship. And that's the way it should be. You get five equals here. And five people should have an equal opportunity and an equal responsibility. And this will, I think, help balance that out a little bit better.
All right, we'll put a draft together, or put a proposal together at our soonest meeting that we can do that. Have Rod take a look at it and make sure it's all kosher. And
okay, let's move on.
Move on. So it's on the next agenda, the next couple of agendas, right?
So, next agenda.
Next.
So.
Thank you, guys. Well, deep thought.
The committees, where are we? Carol, do you have, I took notes. You had notes, I'm sure.
Yes,
you
I'm know, going to have
come
the.
Back and listen to the tape. Yes. Okay, we'll draw from that. We're going to keep the communication subcommittee in place. Get rid of which other one? I'm sorry.
I've got my notes and I can.
Okay.
And
we're going to
add
touch
base with
hot water weed or something.
We'll figure out a nice time for it.
What's going to happen is on Wednesday night there will be an amendment to the bylaws. The board policy deals with the rotational aspect of what we discussed previously. That can come back at a later date because that doesn't
2016
before next year. We'll get it to you before that'll become effective 2016. Maybe we'll do it as part of the budget or something like that. One of those adoptions. But there will be some changes to it, and you will have an opportunity to wordsmith it a little bit if you want Wednesday night, depending on how it goes. And at that point in time, you will be ready then to make those new committee appointments, as I'm understanding your desire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
If you could do one thing, too, on those committee, let's see, two things. On the committee assignments, if you could let us know when these committees not the board committees, but the regional committee, when they typically meet, so as people are making their selections, like Mark doesn't want to have day meetings, so, you know, he'll
location
know which
and
ones.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then what? And also, what is there? I know that there's some compensation on some committees and some not, or something. I don't know what.
I can tell you if you go down, if you look at this list right here,
one
that's on there, the aviation is a compensated committee. Special District Association, their annual voting meeting, the one time that they actually take a vote of officers. They meet quarterly, so Bill, you went last Monday, I believe.
Right.
and that was just a regular meeting, so it was not compensated. But when they have the annual meeting, I believe in July, it will be.
Why is that?
Because we have elections.
Because it's an election, it's a Brown Act meeting.
It's a Brown Act meeting, so there's only, and we, you can only be compensated for Brown Act meeting.
Will the president be going to that? Is that something? No, Bill, you're.
East County Contra-Cusk Fire Protection District, if it is a Brown Act meeting, it's compensated. There's a stipend with that. East County Water Management Agency, I don't believe that one is a stipend meeting. LAFCO is, P6 is, school district is, and the RTA is. So long as it's a Brown Act.
All Brown Act meetings.
You only get compensated for meetings. It's in the CSD law, this page that you can read.
Okay.
It spells out very carefully and specifically what qualifies and what does not qualify. And none of the subcommittees are stipendable meetings.
Well, I guess the question I have, if you're not voting, why would there be compensation if somebody attends? Like,
if you read number 3, C3, it's the middle highlight on here. It says representation of the district, meaning one of you, the primary or alternate, at a public meeting or a public hearing conducted by another public agency, provided that the board of directors has previously approved the member's representation at board of directors meeting. That provides for a stipend at that point. You don't have to be participating in the meeting. You might be there to testify on our behalf. You might be there to gain, just to get information on an item that LAFCA might be considering, for example. I think the last time any of us went to the LAFCA meeting was when they were considering our municipal services review, our MSR, middle of last year. And I think, I don't remember who went to that, but
I did.
Chris did. Mm-hmm. But at that point in time, that was affecting us. And so while we didn't get up and speak to it, certainly it impacted us. And so it was appropriate for a board member to attend that meeting in case they came back with something that negatively impacted us or they wanted to do something.
But the idea we can bring information back to the board.
Well, I'm confused then, because it seems to me that all of these committees were there to gather information or present information or participate in a discussion. Correct. So they should all be compensated.
Well, they have to.
Depends on the format of the meeting you're going to.
If it's not a Brown Act
meeting. One of those organizations does not format their meeting as a Brown Act, where they have a posted agenda and a time for public speaking and that type of thing. So therefore, it doesn't fit in that category.
Now I got you.
Read number 1, E1 above the first highlight yellow. E says, for the purposes of this section, a day of service.
Yeah.
And a day of service could be, you could have 3 days of service in one day.
Right.
A meeting conducted pursuant to the Ralph M. Brown Act.
Okay.
So it
has to be posted.
Right, there you go.
Yep.
Got to be that. That's what makes it
the posted agenda.
Yep. You know, as I'm sitting here thinking about, the County Board of Supervisors meets regularly, and there's always things that might be impacting us, and we don't have any, there's no regional representation for that. But there may be a time, but you know what I'm saying? There may be a time.
You're not reading your agendas, guys?
That'd be the hardest $100 you ever earned.
Oh, it would be brutal.
It's painful. But.
Yeah, I go through all 500 items in the consent calendar just to make sure nothing affects us.
And just so you know, you cannot exceed 6 in a month's period of time.
Yeah,
that's like.
For,
and you don't have to take the compensation.
You can go to as many as you want. You only get compensated.
Exactly. You can go to all of them.
Okay.
Let's move on.
Are you done?
Bill, does that answer your question?
Yeah. Next.
Next. All right. Let's see here. Blah, blah. Item 10. Budget and personal.
You already went over the budget.
We did that. You finished item 10, personal actions.
I'm trying to touch screen and use my personal computer. I'm going to hold off on the personnel matters until another meeting, but I am going to come back to you with a request for reconsideration
of our classification compensation study. There are some things that are happening behind the scenes, and I think it's important that the board reconsider that decision. And you will be notified soon as to the reasons why. So in any event, that's...
Are you talking about like a reorganization, or what are you talking about?
Classification and compensation.
Okay. All right.
not a reorganization.
All right.
The last item is something for, it's, we've talked about the things that have, staff has brought to you some of the items that are of concern to us. There's two specifically, the items having to do with, water meters and then the projects we're building, the filtration project and the denitrification project. As we roll out our budget and roll into our budget season, what are there any items that are on your lists or anything that you want us to focus on to come back to be considered during the budgetary process? You don't have to answer the question right now. If you have ideas, great. If you have certain things you want to discuss, bring it up at your future comments at a board meeting. Shoot an email to me or Dina. We can take a look at those types of things. So this is your opportunity to weigh in on what those items may be moving forward.
We'll get back to you on that.
Get back. Need to do some thinking.
All right.
I don't have anything in mind other than what you've already been talking about.
I would say
I want to go back to a community center, and so I want to this year or next fiscal year have a funding mechanism.
I agree 100%. I thought
we had talked about that at a board meeting a couple weeks ago, and actually I was talking to Dean about it this morning. At Director Pease's request and the board consensus was to come back to the board with some form of a cost estimate plan phasing procedure that haven't had a chance to think about yet, but I'm starting to kind of wrap my arms around it. I do know that we have money in the budget for preliminary services, and in order to do that, it will cost us a little bit of money. But I will bring that to the board, depending on the cost. I mean, if I think it's too exorbitant, we won't go there. But I think if it's a reason why I'm gonna have to bring somebody in that is in that industry to be able to provide some true cost for it.
All right.
At least some ballpark estimates.
But this is for the concept of redoing the community center building itself.
Well, there would be relocation of our offices as well as
right.
that as well.
I'm thinking
and a funding mechanism
yes.
for that. Okay.
I'm thinking, how do you fund recreation programs in Discovery Bay? And that's where I'm looking at.
Well, I'm looking at.
He said physical plan. You're at services.
Yeah, I'm looking
services.
At the product. I mean,
all right.
And then there's a lot much discussion on the subcommittees and assignments and stuff. And I would ask the board that. As we do that we would have like a monthly update. We have a line item at our regular agenda that always talks about how committee updates or reports, and I would expect that we would have a calendar of meetings laid out and that we'd have a reporting mechanism. Either we didn't meet at all or we were working on this type of a issue or we found these, some 5 minutes of findings or what's going on would be good. So
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
It'd help bring the rest of the board up to speed on the committee.
Exactly.
the board does that as it relates to their regional meetings that they've attended. But it hasn't happened as it relates to the sub.
And I think it should.
Yeah. It should be logged. I mean, so, either we meet or we don't meet, and then, if
what
not,
do we do?
Yeah, if two guys went and did a waste of water meeting or subcommittee meeting, then give us 2 minutes.
Absolutely.
Whatever.
From the committee member.
Most of the time, and as you guys will find out eventually, most of the time, Greg covers or Virgil covers or.
Well,
that can be a report.
But
right.
You guys should just say, hey, that's exactly what we talked about or something. I don't know.
It usually does get discussed.
Well, it'll keep us more aware of what's going on.
As an example, the Water Wastewater Committee met this past Wednesday, and we discussed briefly the subject that Greg was here talking about today. But there were a whole bunch of other items on that agenda that weren't discussed
you know, that we didn't bring up today.
Well,
because there are ongoing projects, there are updates, there are
there's
a lot of different.
But I think the rest of the board should get a little snapshot of that.
Yeah.
Whenever those, not an in-depth discussion of everything.
Yeah, but we made this committee as a priority, so let's make sure we're all being communicating and on the same page. So
correct.
No, I think any public comment? No public in the room. I'd like to thank everyone in the staff and adjourn this meeting at 11:48.